Thanks, Rob. Hey, it's a download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman with you till 11 o'clock tonight. Yes. A good old Thursday night in the city of Chicago. Lots to talk about. Not just with Trump, of course, but locally. State of Illinois. Budgets. All sorts of stuff. We got a great show lined up tonight. I'm very excited about tonight. Tonight's one of those shows that I've been looking forward to a long time when you see it. And we have like a system in our office that's, you know, like a show board, if you will. It says what's coming up, and I was always looking ahead to this one because we have some great guests that I've always wanted to talk to and some regulars that are coming back that I always want to talk to. Looking forward to tonight. Coming up after the 7:30 news, we're going to talk with Madeline Dubek from Reboot Illinois and PolitiFact Illinois. We will talk with her about the state we're in. I haven't decided, Pete, if I like the name. The state we're in. That's kind of a double entendre, you know, like, oh, the state we're in, oh, we're in a bad state. Oh, we're also in the state of Illinois. Or how about sifting through the Illinois? One of those two. The state we're in was actually was a show. I forgot out of, maybe it was Europe? I did a little Google searching today. So that's already been used. But Madeline Dubik's going to join us on the regular to break down some of the issues that are happening in Springfield. Big week for it. We have two big issues. One, the unbalanced budget that was proposed by Governor Rauner, but also the judge refusing to overturn the ruling that kept workers, state workers, being paid during the budget crisis. Attorney General Lisa Madigan was trying to get that to be reversed to put a little pressure on the lawmakers in Springfield, because if state workers are not getting paid, boom, we've seen that with government shutdowns in the past. It forces them to get to the table, and it forces them to come up with a spending plan. Well, not the case. They still get to pay the state workers. So we will talk with Madeline about that. Also, Senator Daniel Biss is going to join us. We'll talk with Senator Biss about his big plan to get presidential candidates to release their tax returns. If you want to get on the Illinois ballot, you have to release your tax return. He's making a move at that this week. We'll talk with him as well. Coming up in the 8 o'clock hour, one of Chicago's greatest. I guess you would call her a reporter, but she's been someone who has really brought science to new generations. Emily Grassley has been the host of Brain Scoop, not only on YouTube as part of the Nerd Fighter crew, but at the Field Museum, where she has the title of Chief Curiosity Correspondent. She essentially tells the world about what cool things are happening at the Field Museum. She's going to be at the Wild Things Conference, a conference about Chicago's wilderness and nature, this weekend alongside Robbie Telfer. And they're going to be in studio to talk about their presentation. They're presenting at the conference. Their seminar is called Chicugly, Redefining Chicago's Natural Beauty. Chicugly. So we'll talk with Emily and Robbie coming up at the big table, 8 o'clock tonight. Also, Bob Kessler's going to be here. Yeah, good old news guy here at WGN. But also, what he does for a living is play harmonica. And he organizes the Harmonica Hoedown, which is going to be a Martyrs 7th Annual Harmonica Hoedown. So he is bringing in some of his boys, and we're going to play harmonica. We're going to play the harp around the table in the 9 o'clock hour. Also, the web series Brown Girls, which has just been unbelievable press and buzz for this thing. I mean, it's getting such great national reviews, shot right here in Chicago. It debuted yesterday on Elle Magazine and other places. In studio tonight, Sonia Denis. She is one of the stars, the co-stars of Brown Girls, and she will be my guest. She actually was on the show before. She played The Worst with us. Chicago comedian. This is a little bit more drama. It's more of a dramedy. So it'll be interesting to talk to her about how she's made that transition. But Sonia Denis on the show tonight. And also coming up at 10 o'clock, a rare Thursday treat. Are you ready for this? Download Nation, are you ready? Steve Gadlin and the Frying Pan tonight, 10 o'clock. He was on Dancing with the Stars? No, Shark Tank. And he won with IWantToDrawACatForYou.com. Now he has a development deal with Mark Cuban. Before he brings ideas to Cuban, he brings them here to workshop. So he'll have a new idea tonight to give us a yay or nay, 312-981-7200. It's a great, great segment. We usually do on Fridays, but we're at the auto show tomorrow night. So Steve is here tonight. How exciting is that? All right, we got a great show. Let's get to it. News, weather, traffic, Rob Martyr, production. Rob Martyr, production with Pete Zimmerman. I'm Justin Kaufman. This is The Download, a a show about Chicago starring those who know it well. We'll take a break. We'll come back. We'll do the carryout. Stay with us. All right. We're getting to the show here. We got a big one tonight, so let's kick it off like we do every night with the carryout. This, of course, our nightly segment where I read the news to you at home. You don't have to. Here are today's top stories. President Trump went deep today. An hour and 20-minute press conference to essentially introduce his new Department of Labor nominee. But this was more of an equivalent of free swim at the public pool. Baby Ruths and all. He took questions on everything. I'm surprised he didn't tell us what soap he used. I love Dove. Very glad for that soap. Very, very, very glad. Irish Spring. Very unfair. Very unfair soap. Sad. Trump attacked the media, the Democrats, and the Ninth Circuit Court. Also illegal leaks, the media, Washington insiders, chaos, electoral college history, the media, inner cities, immigration, and let's face it, he attacked all of our seventh grade educations. Just relentlessly bad grammar. My language arts teacher would have probably put me in detention if I talked this way. But he's mad about White House leaks. He said the leaks are real. The news about the leaks, fake. Come on, man. But talk is talk, and Trump is Trump. When the dust settled on this press conference, a takeaway, not unlike me when I play Mario Kart with my family, he just wants to remind you that he won. Chicago came up again. This time Trump acknowledged that not all of Chicago is a murderous war zone, finally, but that one is a luxurious, elegant, safe place and the other is almost as bad as the Middle East. He said there were two Chicagos. I would think that's like 45 Chicagos, right? Because in his mind, Chicago's either the Trump Tower or down at 64th and King. How about a third option? I don't know. Lakeview? Albany Park? Rogers Park? Chatham? Lots of options there. At least we're getting somewhere. At least now he at least acknowledges there are two Chicagos. Then my favorite part of the presser was when he asked the black reporter if she'd be willing to help him set up the meeting with the Congressional Black Caucus. He actually said, quote, "Are they friends of yours?" Come on, that's too good. What's next? You're going to tell her that he loves her question and he loves, for the record, R&B? "I just want to say, I love your question. I also love Boys to Men. Get all their stuff, got the greatest hits. You and me. Let's be friends." Closer to home, a judge in downstate Illinois refused to reverse an earlier decision to pay workers without the budget. Attorney General Lisa Madigan was trying to get the judge to stop payment so that the lawmakers in Springfield would be forced to resolve the budget standoff. But no go. So what's it mean? Probably a four-day weekend. Maybe a nice winter vacation. Take her easy for a couple months. Nothing to worry about. They'll deal with the budget after the election. Oh, no election this year? After the next election. Right. After yesterday's budget address, Governor Rauner released his budget proposal, which was $7 billion unbalanced. Is that the right number? Did I get that right? I need to fact check that number. His budget team said that this budget relies on big changes that can only be done by the grand bargain in the Senate. So can I just throw this out here? As an Illinois resident who listens to his governor, I was under the impression that unbalanced budgets were bad. Very bad. And also the grand bargain, it looks to increase the state income tax to 5%. Wasn't that the same level it was at when the governor repealed it? But you might get a cap on property taxes. All right. It feels like you could have done that any time. Why does it feel that Governor Rauner's really not good at this, right? So he repealed, the state went without a budget, unbalanced for 2 years, and the compromise we've been waiting for is that the tax will just be reinstated? Clever like a fox, or clever like a really bad politician. It's one of those two, right? I'm sure I'm missing something. Enlighten me. Students at the University of Chicago protested today over a visit of former Trump campaign manager, Corey Lewandowski. Is it Lewandowski or Lewandowski? Lewandowski? He's a guest at David Axelrod's Institute of Politics on campus. It's an off-the-record private no-press event. Students say, why give this guy a platform on our campus? The Institute says, hey, we're nonpartisan. There are about 100 students there, which is not a lot of protesters. So does Lewandowski like that there are only 100 students? Or is it really more of a statement that nobody really cares about him? Milo, he gets, clash, 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 clash. Corey gets, You guys want to go over to 53rd Street, check out the record store? In weather, it's going to be so warm this weekend that the architectural river cruise is back on. Come on, if that's not a sign of the apocalypse, right? When that thing gets hummed up, oh, man. In sports, this weekend is the NBA All-Star Game in New Orleans. Remember, it was supposed to be in Charlotte, but the city was changed because of the bathroom law, among other things. So now it's in New Orleans, where you can go to the bathroom wherever you want. D-Wade and Jimmy Butler will be there. Butler's starting, and that's it. No other players in the three-point shooting contest, the dunk contest, the rising star contest, the pie-eating contest. No contest for any other of the Bulls. They play the Celtics tonight. The Bulls are currently 2 games under .500, so they're not going to make it back to even at the break. So just as Paxson Foreman planned it. The Cubs and Sox back at it today. Clowning around, shagging fly balls, practicing bunting. Remember Little League practice? Think that. That's what they're doing right now. Where the coach is saying, hey, let's try two. Let's go third to first. Oh, sorry. Oh, sorry. Oh, foul ball. I'm not good at this. Saturday is the first full squad practice, a practice that Joe Maddon said he's going to have some fun with. What's it going to be? Dressed like a hippie day? Or how about a live little bear cub pooping in the outfield? I say dunk tank, right? Yeah. Little get the coaches in the dunk tank. 50 cents, you know? Good stuff. Tony Romo apparently believes he's going to be released by the Cowboys this offseason instead of being traded. The Bears still show up in different articles about a possible landing place, but Romo wants to win now. And you know what? That's just not the strategy of the Chicago Bears. No. Winning now? No. We win later. Maybe. That's actually in the locker room when you know when they come in. Win now. No. Later. Maybe. And after Northwestern's loss last night to Maryland, their tournament chances still look sound. Most of the sites that predict brackets have Northwestern still in the mix. They got games with Rutgers, Indiana, Michigan, Illinois, and Purdue left on the schedule. And finally tonight, Justin Bieber is being investigated for a possible crime for alleged fight before the Grammys. Sources say he headbutted someone who was recording him at a restaurant. Poor Bieber. Discovered on YouTube, arrested on YouTube. Also, why would you headbutt anybody with that beautiful face? Oh. That's the carryout for February 16, 2017. Hey, it's going to be nice this weekend. We don't have any ice cream, but we still make shakes. All we need is ice, milk, and some Euros. Boom. All right, coming up, Madeline Dubik's going to join us, as well as State Senator Daniel Biss. And then at the 8 o'clock hour, Emily Grassley and Robbie Telfer are going to talk science, nature, Chicugly. Can't wait. It's a download here on 720 WGN. Stay with us. Rob Martier, how are you, my man?
Can't wait for that 60-degree weather, my friend.
Are you jonesing on Blackhawks hockey? Like, the idea of them getting a bye week and we've now had, what, 4 days off? Do you feel as a hockey fan that you're like, all right, we've had enough time? Especially when you're doing highlights of different teams still playing.
I miss it, man.
Right?
I miss it.
I mean, there's a certain point where I like the concept, I guess, the NHL, of giving a whole week off, but it seems a little too long.
It is.
Right? Like a 3-day, if you gave them even 5 days, right? And you said, okay, to Sunday and then you play again on Thursday or Friday, that's enough time.
All high-level athletes, and you, me, Pete, I mean, we love our sports. These are all creatures of habit. So you take them out of that routine where they're playing every other night or every second night, yeah. and it does something to their, again, their routine. So yeah. we'll see how they play Saturday night against the Oilers.
Yeah, hopefully they just rattle off like 30, 35 wins in a row.
Right. That would be nice.
Yeah. Thanks, Rob. It's a download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. We start our new Thursday night segment here with Madeline Dubik. Madeline, I was in the beginning of the show, I was like, do we call it The State We're In? Which is a good name, but that's already been taken. There was a European show that did that name.
Really?
There's like
also
the Dutch.
An education advocacy organization in Illinois called Advance Illinois that puts out
The State We're In. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, what about Bring the Illinois? Right? Does that work? Okay, we'll figure it out. We got some time. Madeline Dubik, of course, the publisher of RebootIllinois.com and PolitiFact Illinois as well. Good to see you. You've been on the program before.
Thank you.
All right, so as we sort of sift through the Illinois, if you will.
Yeah.
This week, we really kind of started up the what we're going to get closer and closer to what could be a budget deal, the grand bargain. We saw with the budget address. But still, today, Governor Rauner's budget team started on display talking about the budget they put forward, billions of dollars out of whack. I mean, are you seeing at all any sort of movement towards a deal that would end this stalemate, this historic stalemate?
It certainly didn't feel that way from the hearing today, nor from the tone or tenor of the General Assembly yesterday as the governor was giving his remarks and Democratic majorities were
laughing,
jeering, yeah. Hooting derisively. Several of them had signs on their desks that talked about alternate facts, and
that's not even an Illinois thing. That's a Trump thing. That's a Kellyanne Conway thing. What are we doing? That's like, you got to keep it all straight.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, okay, so let's talk about the budget address yesterday. There was at least a chord that Rauner was trying to strike, which is we should all come together for this. It was met with a lot of, I think you would say that it was, I don't want to say it was, I guess the idea, what I'm trying to get at is it wasn't deserved, but at the same time, the Democrats are jeering and laughing because they feel that Governor Rauner is one of the reasons why there has been such trouble in Springfield and divisiveness because of the way that he's doing politics before policy.
Yeah, well, he's never stopped campaigning, and so that doesn't make things any easier, and it sort of defies reasonable reality and expectation when you say out of one side of your mouth that you want everyone to come together for the good of the state, and on the other side of your mouth you're denying that you're involved with your Republican Party's BossMadigan.com campaign and are constantly bashing the guy you just shook hands with before you delivered your speech.
Right. So, okay, so The real emphasis is put on this grand bargain. For people who haven't necessarily heard that before or know what that is, let's talk about that.
It's grand.
It's the Senate.
It's huge.
They're leaving Mike Madigan out of it for now, but it's the Senate leaders, Cullerton and Redonio, getting together to really sort of hammer out some compromises on both sides to get to a budget deal.
It is, exactly, and it... it is grand in that it is, you know, 13 different pieces of legislation, everything from an income tax increase to a property tax freeze. At one point, there was a piece of legislation in there that dealt with raising the minimum wage that is now going to be handled separately, pension changes. Mm-hmm. School funding reform. There's a placeholder for the budget. Gambling expansion.
Put it all in one bargain.
Just one grand bargain.
Madeline, a texter just texted in, and it really was the next question I was going to ask is, today was a big, a loss for, I would say, for the people in the way that the judge decided not to even to overturn the idea that state workers can continue to get paid during this budget standoff. Most times when there's not a budget, you don't get paid as a state worker. Early on in the process, there was a ruling that said state workers can get paid, and it's taken the pressure off, the deadline from the lawmakers. They could take their time. Cullerton and Redonio are taking their time with this grand bargain, even as bills pile up and we don't have a spending plan. The idea from the attorney general is if we put a deadline on, it'll force them to get to the table. With that, not an option.
Yeah.
What are some of the other things that can be done to raise the stakes or at least put a deadline in place so that we don't get to the end of this session and be like, well, you know what? Let's take a summer break and see what we can do in the fall.
I'm not sure there are many options left because, you know, a lot of us have felt for some time that there needs to be a real government shutdown to put pressure on these guys to come together and put on their big boy pants and big girl pants and get something done and get something hammered out. You know, there was every indication that the previous ruling was actually going to be in Lisa Madigan's favor, but not to be so. So,
are there options? Are there
anything? I think the only other thing out there is the fact that the lawmakers themselves are being paid their own paychecks quite late.
So,
you know, there are some of them, this is their truly their sole source of income.
And you know, even, I mean, as another texter pointed out, you know, well, the election will do that. We got to toss out all these lawmakers. But we saw, I mean, we just had an
election. That's in 2 years.
Yeah, but, and we had an election. Yes. And there was this thought that, you know, things were going to change. And it didn't change. If anything, it swayed in the favor of Democrats. I mean, maybe the supermajority didn't stick, but it wasn't really a supermajority to begin with.
The Republicans gained seats, but not enough to have it be all that meaningful. So
I guess my point is elections on their own
are not
going to change the way that these two parties down in Springfield are just not compromising enough to get something done. Now, we've been talking about set out the plan for the grand bargain, and it seems like they're getting together, and it seems like Rauner's doing everything he possibly can to tiptoe around it, to let them do their work instead of riling up the politics. Do you feel, I mean, I guess as a layman, I'm like, okay, let's say that gets done, and it's, wow, what an accomplishment. It still has to go through Mike Madigan.
Right.
And I don't understand, by just keeping him out of the loop, sort of saying you're not involved, it just to me feels like he is, I don't think he'll do anything to help or hurt, you know, his position as the Democratic leader. So I don't know. I mean, to me, it's very pessimistic. I'm being very pessimistic that they'll put a grand bargain in front of him, and political pressure on its own would make him vote for it.
Political pressure has not worked thus far. The only thing that in 25, 30 years of watching Mike Madigan operate, I've ever seen him, he does listen to his members, and when his members feel like they've had enough and they are pressuring him to the point where he thinks they may be right if they tell him that their own elections, their own re-elections may be threatened by this.
Right. Maybe then, he'll listen.
Then
but that's his job.
Listens.
I mean, this job is to, I mean, he really does think, you know, as chairman of the Democratic Party, his job is to make sure they get reelected. So he's got his eye, as much as we sort of get on Rauner about always campaigning, Mike Madigan's doing the same thing.
Oh, absolutely. And he is solely concerned with setting up his members for the next election and the state Democratic Party for the next election.
Okay, so I kind of made a joke in the carryout about, I did a head scratcher in the way that when Governor Rauner began his tenure as governor, the first real big thing he did was he repealed an income tax.
No.
What was it?
The income tax had always been set to expire.
Okay.
And
sure,
the Democratic majorities did nothing to take care of that before.
So the Democrats are the ones that did it, but they did it for political pressure to make Rauner make a move on taxes, right? So anyway, but my point being that if this grand bargain calls for an income tax increase,
yeah,
which has been a big part of what Governor Rauner didn't want to do, what does that look like at the end? What the optics of that when all of this has gone 2.5 years and we're like, hey, I did it, and it's back at 5%, and we got property tax caps. Is that enough?
It's remains to be seen who takes the fall for that or who gets blamed with it. Certainly he's the governor, and he is supposed to be the leader of the state, so he will wear the jacket to a large extent, I'm sure, and Mike Madigan will work very hard to make sure that he wears the jacket more than Madigan himself does. I can envision ads now that point out that when Governor Rauner first ran for office, he promised that he was going to decrease the income tax back down to 3% by the end of his first term in office.
Yeah. Well, that's not going to happen, right? Madeline Dubik is my guest tonight. She is the publisher of RebootIllinois.com, also PolitiFact Illinois. All right, so let's take a break. We'll come back. We'll add in State Senator Daniel Biss, ask about what he thinks of the grand bargain, as well as his plan to make anyone who runs for president to release their tax returns if they want to be on the Illinois ballot.
They will not be tax-free.
They will not be tax-free. Madeline Dubik in studio. Stay with us. Welcome back to Download Here, 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. In studio with me, Madeline Dubik. She is the publisher of RebootIllinois.com, PolitiFact Illinois as well. You know, it's something you have been working on because, you know, it was in the paper not too long ago that you were going behind the old paywall. You're doing subscriptions. How's that going?
It's going great, but we'd love to have more people sign up and check us out.
What do you get? You just get access to all the stuff that you guys are doing?
You get access to our PolitiFact Illinois stuff is free 24/7, but a lot of our in-depth reporting and analysis and fast facts, infographics, insight, all those kinds of things are behind a paywall, so for less than what you spend on Starbucks.
Classic line.
In a day, you can get real facts,
coming
not
from
alternative facts.
Coming from a public media background, that Starbucks line gets you every time. Always, man. It's always. For the cost of one cup of coffee.
It's true.
Well, Reboot's great. Reboot Illinois is great. You should subscribe.
I mean, all these people are worried about Donald Trump, or they love Donald Trump, and I say more power to them. Keep staying involved, but you need to get involved in your state government too.
Yeah,
and understand what's going on and what these guys are trying to do.
Well, we're talking with Madeline. A new segment we're going to do on Thursdays here. We're waiting on State Senator Daniel Biss, and we'll get him shortly when he comes through. The election, we talked about the election, is 2 years away.
Yeah.
I mean, Chris Kennedy came out last week saying, I'm running for governor. You know, Kennedy, of course, a big Democratic name, not necessarily in Illinois, but a big name, but a self-proclaimed millionaire, billionaire, and he, like Governor Rauner, is ready to bring his own money to the game.
Yep, and he's going to need every bit of it that he can get, because apparently the Democrats won't be able to attack Bruce Rauner now for being too wealthy if Chris Kennedy is in the race and J.B. Pritzker.
I was going to say the other is J.B. Pritzker. And our next guest, his name has been thrown around as somebody who may be interested in that state house at some point, or the governor's mansion. State Senator Daniel Biss, he's a Democrat who represents some of the north suburbs, including Northbrook, Skokie. Senator Biss, thanks for joining us. We appreciate it.
Hey, thanks for having me, Justin. How are you?
Good, good. So, you know, we were just talking, Madeline Dubik's here as well, and we were talking about the concept
Hey, Senator.
Of, you know, Chris Kennedy getting into the race for governor, and if we are at the stage here in the state of Illinois where you have to be really super rich to run for office.
No, of course we're not. I think there are people who think that because Bruce Rauner was elected governor after spending unprecedented amounts of his own money and is now already on the way to spending even more unprecedented amounts of his own money this time, and I think people saw Donald Trump and learned a lot of these lessons from that, too, though I would urge people not to learn too many lessons about emulating Donald Trump. But the truth of the matter is that we are sitting right now in 2017 in a moment of unbelievable activist hunger, where people across the state of Illinois are hungry for someone who's going to offer a clear, progressive economic vision for how to really fix the state's problems and are looking for something to get involved in.
Okay,
and
let me.
I think if you build a movement that is more powerful than all the money and all the machines in the world.
Let me ask you this, Senator: Is any of that reflected in the grand bargain that is happening in the Senate right now? Do you feel like there are at least any sort of thoughts or movements included in that grand bargain that address that deal with that hunger that you were just talking about?
Well, I think the grand bargain represents, an effort to move past the terrible impasse we're in, and the people of Illinois have an incredible hunger to do that because the state's being taken apart brick by brick because the damage being done is unbelievable. But I also think the grand bargain kind of exists in the world we live in now. And while fixing the problems in front of us today, we also have to be aspirational about what's the way forward. And the way forward ultimately is going to be to fund government by getting money where it can be gotten fairly, by taxing the millionaires and billionaires who have gotten away scot-free while the rest of us are paying too much, by using those resources to fund crucial programs that actually invest in people and allow our economy to grow based upon investing from the middle out, not just hoping that some kind of trickle-down is going to work. And I think we have to ultimately build a long-term vision, not just for how to get through today's crisis, but how to get to the place that Illinois needs to and can eventually be.
Senator, just to clarify, what do you mean when you say they've gotten away scot-free? Because I think they still pay their taxes.
Well, they may or may not pay their legal taxes, but they certainly pay a much lower share of the tax burden than most states. Illinois has one of the most regressive tax codes of any state in the country. And so when people in the middle class and the working poor feel like they're paying a lot, they are. And yet government's always broke because the richest people pay less, partially because of our Constitution, partially because of other aspects of our tax code. But the bottom line is that if you compare us to lots of other states, not just the famously liberal states like California and New York, but states around us like Wisconsin, Minnesota, Iowa, we are much more reliant on gouging the middle class and the poor to fund government than those other states are, and it's not fair and it's not right, and it's also not economically sound.
Well, okay, so, I mean, let me ask you about one of the big things that Governor Rauner has asked for in his turnaround agenda, and he seems to be stuck on it for the grand bargain, this idea of capping or sort of having a cap on property taxes. I mean, that's in the same line that what you're talking about, the idea that the middle class is getting taxed too much and there's not enough to show for it. I mean, do you agree with the governor on the idea of capping property taxes?
Well, I agree that property taxes are too high. The question is, if you want to bring down property taxes, as we all should, how are you going to pay for it? And what the governor wants to do is to take that money out of the wages of working middle-class people. He wants to, for example, go after the prevailing wage. He wants to do more outsourcing in school districts. And these are things that would push down wages and I think typically also decrease the quality of services. And so what I would say is that we should emulate other states that finance their education systems in a very, very different way, that are able to tax people who can afford it, to find that money and therefore have much more sane property tax levels.
So, Senator, your chamber's leader is obviously one of the ones, John Cullerton, working on this deal. And part of that deal as it stands at the moment is to allow some of that outsourcing. Are you saying that you're not in favor of this grand bargain?
Yeah, step in line, Biss. What's going on?
I've never been one to step in line. Listen, I'm a very, very enthusiastic supporter of people sitting down like adults and trying to work things out. There are parts of the grand bargain that make a tremendous amount of sense. There are parts that I like less, and all of it's changing very fast. And, I'm going to evaluate the pieces, one at a time as they come forward. When we voted on four grand bargain bills last week, I voted for three of them that I think were sensible, and I voted against one that didn't make sense to me. And I don't think that anybody should say, listen, because my leader is for this, I have to vote for all of it. I think we all have to make our own decisions. But what I do think is really important in this is at least you've got people, Democrat and Republican, sitting down and trying to work something out. And that, unfortunately, is new in Springfield and should be noted and should be lauded, and something we need an awful lot more of.
All right, Senator Biss, we got to wrap up here, but real, really quick, income tax. Show us your income. Show us your tax returns, or you don't get on the ballot. Go.
Right. So I put in a bill, Senate Bill 982, that says, listen, if you are unwilling to release 5 years of income tax returns, then you can't appear on the ballot in Illinois running for president. This is something that candidates of both parties have agreed to do for generations now, and precedent was broken by President Trump, and I think it was really problematic for the country.
You think it'll get through? You think it's just a dog and pony show, or do you think you'll actually get something on going there?
I'm not one for dog and pony shows. I'm going to try hard to pass it, and I think I've got a real chance. I'm not going to count any chickens, but I don't put in bills just to make statements.
There
I'm
you go.
Do my best to pass it,
and
I'd like
to hear that.
I hope we will.
Senator Biss, always a pleasure. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Senator.
Hey, thanks so much, Justin.
And Madeline Dubick, of course, the publisher of RebootIllinois.com, PolitiFact Illinois. Thank you as well. We will have you back here the next Thursday that's available. I mean, we get Blackhawks games and things like that. But I think it was successful. So, hey, the state we're in, Illinois.
Or as we like to say on Reboot Illinois, only in Illinois.
Only in, oh, there you go. Only in Illinois. We got it.
720 WGN.
Welcome back to the download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Coffin. We're coming up this Saturday. Nature takes center stage in Chicago with the Wild Things Conference, the UIC Forum. It's the seventh year for the conference, which brings together scientists and nature enthusiasts from across the Chicago area. It's a day-long conference of presentations and workshops, including one that features two rock stars of Chicago science. It's called Chicugly, Redefining Natural Beauty in Chicago, and it features Emily Grassley and Robbie Telfer. Emily is the chief curiosity correspondent for the Field Museum. She's also the host of Brain Scoop, the wildly popular YouTube channel, video blog that first started as part of the Nerdfighter community, where she's still very active. And Robbie Telfer, who I've known for years, is an outstanding poet and host of the Encyclopedia Show, who's now full on nature.
That's where I live now.
As the Calumet Outreach Coordinator for the Field Museum, it's my pleasure to welcome Emily and Robbie to the download. Good to see you guys. Thanks for being here.
Hi, Justin.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
All right, so I have a lot of questions about Chicugly, but let's talk first about the Wild Things Conference. Mm-hmm. I mean, did I articulate the sole purpose of this conference in the lead there?
Yeah, I'd say so. I mean, it's going to be a day-long extravaganza. It's only every 2 years, and there's going to be like 1,600 people there, and it's just lots of people from people who do this for their entire lives as their expertise that they're paid for, and complete amateurs. Your only requirement is that you think nature is cool.
Yeah. Pretty low bar. Just like going outside or just at least reading about it.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, it's really a place, I saw this phrase I wanted to ask you guys about, a place to this almost strengthen the conservation community.
Mm-hmm.
Talk
mm-hmm.
about the conservation community in Chicago. I mean, obviously, nature is a big part of what happens at the Field Museum, but also in a lot of other institutions. But it goes beyond that. There's a lot of people who volunteer and really take to heart conservation in the area.
Yeah, I mean, Chicago, for being one of the most populous places in the planet, is also one of the most, at least in our country, biodiverse. We have this really weird juxtaposition where the prairies come in from the west and the broadleaf forest comes in from the east and the boreal forest comes in from the north, colliding with Lake Michigan, where we have tons of industry and people and movements of people and history, so that now at this moment in history we have tons of nature that needs protecting and conserving, mm-hmm. and tons of people willing to do it. So that I think Chicago is one of the leaders in the country for this kind of work, where we're actually turning back the apocalypse clock that just got moved forward a little bit, so that we can save some of the nature that we have here. That's really special and one of a kind.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, Chicago, like Rob was saying, is like really specially situated as being accessible to nature, unlike most major metropolitan areas, and also has like a long history of being cognizant of where it is in the country. I mean, the birding communities around here have known this for decades, but this is really an opportunity to bring in, you know, new generations of people and you know, a whole new activist community and environmentally conscious and aware citizens in Chicago to facilitate conversations and provide resources and just get together and celebrate this great city and nature.
Well, you mentioned the idea of different generations or newer generations. I mean, I think when you think about, it's funny, my 9-year-old, recycling is second nature to him. I mm-hmm. mean, the generation that's come is taught in a different way. When it comes to conservation, it comes to the nature or the natural state of Chicago around us. Are the younger generations getting into that? I mean, are they understanding the things that you just talked about, Robbie?
Yeah, they're the ones who are going to save all the stuff we messed up for them. Without them, we're effed. Can I say that?
You just
I'm referring to a salamander, or actually a newt, yeah, as part of its life cycle as EFT. Yeah, we're effed. And so the thing is, you know, I work with young people all the time doing habitat restoration with volunteers in the woods. And when I was growing up, if you asked a classroom full of an average student, they wouldn't be able to say what an invasive species was. Mm-hmm. The concept existed, but not in a mainstream way. Now I feel like that idea is prevalent, and people can at least give you a pretty good definition of invasive species. That if you know what an invasive species is, that means that you have a concept of colonization. That means you have a concept of globalization in ways that it just wasn't common knowledge when I was growing up.
Yeah, and Rob has a lot more experience doing this, like, on the ground in Chicago. My experience has been working with digital communities and getting people who are aware of the Field Museum and of Chicago, but want to learn how to participate in their own backyards. Mm-hmm. And so that interest of and that national and global awareness to be more conscientious of the imprint that we're leaving, I think, is quickly catching on, thankfully. And the resources available online for people to learn about that has never been more accessible. And so I've seen a lot of that positive enthusiasm, you know, how can I get involved, what can I do, and a level of sense of community that I never knew, even when I lived in places of great biological diversity.
Yeah, right. You came from Montana, correct?
Yeah. Right. But it was like nature was so vast there, you just kind of took it for granted.
Right,
like,
right.
Like it wasn't at risk. There's, you know, hundreds of miles of it. What could possibly go wrong?
And I think Chicago, we have a much more present idea of what we've lost what could be if you know where the nature is.
It is such a stark contrast because the way that, say, the millennial generation is painted, in this way that maybe they don't care as much, or, you know, you'll hear it. They hear so much about the workplace. Oh, this entitled millennial generation, they think they could just have it. Oh, this wasteful generation. I mean, but when it comes to issues like conservation or, you know, the planet or anything that has to
or
do with
social
that,
justice, for you, sure.
That's a different story.
Yeah. You know, before I worked at the Field Museum, I worked at Young Chicago Authors with the Louder Than a Bomb Poetry Festival. And what's great to me is that, like, all the young people that I taught there for those 6 years are now, like, leaders in, like, the social justice movement, you know? Like, they're so forward-thinking, and they're the ones who grew up being able to see the unsustainability of the way that we live, be it social justice or environmental justice. And now we rely on them to save us from ourselves.
And that's been a big part of your work, Emily, I mean, both at the Field Museum but also with Brain Scoop, is this different approach to science and bringing together so many different young people around the concepts that normally young people shun.
So it's funny that you bring that up because a couple of weeks ago, I think it was National Geographic, had this article that was like the millennial generation in national parks. And this father went with his son, and his son was like glued to his smartphone when they were at Yellowstone.
Sure, yeah.
And the same kind of like tried narrative. And I read it and I was so frustrated because, one, that's not my experience at all. And two, who's not to say that his son wasn't like tweeting about his amazing experience? And like, and so I posted this on Twitter, as I do. And there was a huge response from a lot of members of the naturalist communities who have built up massive followings of thousands of people. These are scientists, they're students, they're everyday citizens, and they just want to get involved. And they do far more for advocacy for the natural world, you know, looking at their smartphone than maybe going around and looking like they're truly engaging. So I guess that's just all to say that there are so many different ways that you can engage with nature and be an advocate. There is no one right way. There is no wrong way unless you're, you know, littering, you know. But for the most part, I think just awareness and communication and advocacy takes a lot of different shapes. And a lot of that comes through with what I do online, too.
Emily Grassley is the chief curiosity correspondent for the Field Museum. She hosts Brain Scoop, the wildly popular YouTube channel. It's a video blog. It's part of the Nerdfighter community. Also, Robbie Telfer, who is the Calumet Outreach Coordinator at the Field Museum and poet as well. Mm-hmm. They are going to be at the Wild Things Conference at the UIC Forum on Saturday. We'll take a quick break. We'll come back. We'll continue the conversation here at the Big Table. Stay with us. Welcome back to Download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. Well, the Wild Things Conference at the UIC Forum is this Saturday. Two of the featured speakers are in studio. My guests tonight at the Big Table, Emily Grassley, who is the Chief Curiosity Correspondent for the Field Museum, and Robbie Telfer, who's also the Calumet Outreach Coordinator for the Field Museum. Robbie's a poet. Emily is a vlogger. But it's tremendous what you've accomplished, Emily, with just the amazing amount of success that your videos have had just talking science.
Yeah,
I mean,
thanks.
it's truly something that if you're listening right now and you don't know what it is, your kids are probably looking at it. But I got to say, you know, you bring such enthusiasm to the work, but you're not scientists. I mean, you're not quote unquote scientists. You're more artists.
Mm-hmm.
Talk about that relationship with the scientific community.
Well, I guess I can start. My background is in studio art, and I focused on landscape painting when I was in art school and didn't really get involved in museums or nature until I had the chance to visit a natural history museum. And from an artistic perspective, I was like, oh, I can do this. Like, here you have these amazing visual assets. And, you know, the longer I was spending drawing and painting and photographing these specimens, the more I was learning about their life history and about the individualism of nature. And I felt like I could contribute to that. Like, I could help process a roadkill specimen that would end up in a museum collection that people could utilize for hundreds of years that would have my name on it. So for me, it was like almost a selfish thing. Like, I can contribute more as a participant in museums than I can as an artist. You know, people will still be taking care of this dead weasel longer than they'll be taking care of my lousy art. But the more that I spent working in museums and learning about the level of contributions an individual person could have and how they could contribute and make a real impact, I just wanted to advocate for it. And I wanted to get all my friends and family involved. I wanted to shout it from the rooftops that this is an amazing place that we live. And we only have one planet. And as cheesy as that might seem, or like a flash on a motivational poster, it's true. We can all make a difference, and if you spend some time learning about the amazing improbability of the world around you, it just gives you a whole new sense of appreciation for life.
Robbie, like I said at the beginning, I've known you as a poet. I mean, mm-hmm. I've done the Encyclopedia Show. I know a lot about your work. I mean, you will show up at a Young Chicago Authors event or the Printers Row Book Fair mm-hmm. or somewhere, and then the next thing you know, you're out on an island, you know, clipping flowers. Talk about your introduction to
My
this
evolution.
World and your evolution, if you will.
I will. Yes, I feel like some days I feel like the dead weasel. I love poetry still, and I still teach poetry places, and my work at the Encyclopedia Show and Louder Than a Bomb was all about figuring out the ways in which communities access poetry and figuring out that there are a lot of folks who think that you have to have a specialized degree to be a poet, and there are a lot of people who think that you have to have a specialized degree to be a professional to be in the environmental movement.
Right.
And it's sort of like this ivory tower way of people thinking that they own nature or they own language. And even though our society is capitalist, these are things that no one owns. And it's no matter how many systems we try to put on top of it, like deeds and degrees, we're never going to own these things. So everyone can be a poet. And I'm so excited when I see everyone writing poetry and everyone can engage and restore and protect their natural areas or the places that are wild around them. And so the work I do at the Field Museum now is not different from the work I did in poetry. It's just in poetry, your audience is strictly human. And for me, speak English. And so the way that like I get appreciation when I do poetry is applause or a grant or a publication. In habitat restoration, you know, your audience is woodpeckers and nematodes and fungi and
great audience,
oak trees.
By the
they're great.
Yeah,
and the way they applaud.
They're so lively.
They are. They're literally. And the way they applaud is if you, for instance, recently in Soam Woods, they've been removing invasive plants there for decades. And finally, a set of red-headed blackbirds nested there for the first time since the buckthorn era, since the invasive buckthorn moved in. And that's applause. That's like you have communicated your art, in this case habitat restoration, with the landscape, and you're being applauded because these animals are just living their lives free of harm.
Do you feel, not unlike with poetry, but do you feel when you talk about habitat restoration or science that there are barriers that people think that's not for me because that's just you need way too much education or, you know what, I didn't pay attention in that class in sixth grade and now
yeah,
I'm just going to feel like an idiot if I get involved? Do you feel like there are invisible barriers?
Cultural barriers,
yeah.
Yes, and barriers that are upheld by usually old white people. In both cases, old white people have ruined everything. And they're the ones that brought the invasive species here from Europe. Old white people are the worst. I think those barriers are there. And I feel like me and Emily specifically, our jobs are to remove those barriers and show that the distance is much shorter. And thank God for the internet, because we at any moment can look up anything and we're not experts, but our phones are and we can use them to accent our lives.
I was going to say, Emily, that plays into your job as chief curiosity correspondent because, you know, Brain Scoop brought you to the Field Museum mainly because, you know, your enthusiasm and the way that you talk about and discuss science is something that is much different than the status quo that science has been talked about. So they've been able to use you to be almost like your title is, curiosity, to use your curiosity to explore the Field Museum.
Yeah, I mean, there's this amazing thing that children have, and that is innate curiosity. And I don't know at what point it's different for a lot of kids, but at some point in their life, they stop asking why. And that's the saddest point in a person's life, I think, because I hate that you stop asking why. You stop asking why things the way they are, or how something ended up the way it is. And so that, as a curiosity correspondent, is something that I try to do within my job. And I found that enthusiasm and humor is the best way to resonate with people, especially when you're talking about science. Because when you talk about like science, I think people just think publication and peer review and scientific theory and old white guys. Mm-hmm. And science, in my experience, is not all that. It is that, but that's not all of it. And the most dynamic, engaging, creative, diverse people I've met have been scientists and been through the scientific community. So you get to learn these amazing stories. You get to feel like you're connected to the world and to communities in a way you never were before. And on top of that, nature's also hilarious. I just read an article today about the Smithsonian's whale earwax collection and how it's teaching us about changing climates, because whales live really long and they have a ton of earwax, and a bunch of whalers just decided to keep it in a collection. Obviously. And now it's teaching us about pollutants in the ocean and climate change. And like, that's hilarious. Like, it's amazing.
Both of you, I mean, in a way, to use the word, I mean, from your both of your art background, you're curators. I mean, in the way that you, there are stories out there about earwax or things that are happening at the Field Museum or happening out on the island in Kankakee that we don't know about, but the way that you tell the story is different than maybe it's published in the journal. I'm sure that that article wasn't as exuberant about whale earwax.
Had less emojis than I would have used to express.
But yeah, I guess we do try to translate for folks because maybe it's because we don't have a scientific background that we do feel like we have enough base level knowledge about what is awesome about science to just sort of like weed out the parts that don't matter so that people can get excited. And so maybe they are excited about earwax as an entry level. And then once they start digging in, they will end up knowing more than we do.
Well, science is great in the way that there are so many great stats that can blow your mind. Right? Mm-hmm. I mean, that's the beauty of any scientific research is you're like, one in, I mean, we do that all the time. You look at, as a journalist, you know, are scanning different stories, and those are the headlines. One in four, you know, this is, I mean, one of the great stats. I think it's, there's a very small percentage of things that are on display at the Field Museum.
Oh, yeah.
Most of it's behind the scenes you'll never see. That's 90% of the Field Museum is behind closed doors.
It's actually less than 1% is on display.
See, it's like,
it's about 30 million objects in the collections, all housed in that building.
There's 30 million objects, scientific objects, that are in the Field Museum. And that's the kind of stuff that you can tell those stories. You can tell the stories of those things that are back there better than they can tell themselves.
Yeah, they're all dead. That's the thing. and that's what's great about conservation work is that you get to get out there and keep the things alive before they're brought into the Field Museum.
You guys have an interesting relationship in that regard. You are someone who is doing, you know, trying to keep stuff alive, and you tell the story of the dead.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, your whole life, just right here. So you're looking right at it.
Just looking at dead things. But yeah, I mean, because why we tell these stories is because people ask, why does it matter? And why do you have these things? I mean, 13 million of the 30 million specimens at the Field Museum are insects, and a huge proportion of those insects, like 8 million of them, are insects in alcohol, and a great portion of those are like tiny, almost, you know,
microscopic
insects. And so people wonder, like, why can't you just have like three? Like, why don't you just have a couple of them? Why do you need so many? And so answering that question repeatedly with different narratives on why we do have so many specimens and what they teach us about our changing planet and climate change and species distribution and even health. I mean, you think about like Zika outbreaks and how did you know that the Zika virus was linked to a single mosquito? Well, because a taxonomist described that mosquito and because somebody thought to build up a mosquito collection. So now, you know, decades later, we can help solve diseases. And I think a lot of times museums are removed from that point of discovery. And so people forget that when a publication comes out, intrinsically, so much of that information is directly linked to a museum. And so I'm that ambassador to be here to remind you everything we know about our natural world comes from a museum.
Emily Grassley is the chief curiosity correspondent for the Field Museum. Robbie Telfer is the Calumet outreach coordinator at the Field Museum. All right, so let me take a break. We'll get an update on tonight's news, and then I want to come back and I want to talk about Chicugly.
Sure.
I want to talk about the redefining natural beauty with Emily and Robbie here on The Download. Stay with us. Welcome back to Download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Coughlin, Emily Grassley, Robbie Telfer in studio. They're my guests tonight at the big table. They will be featured at the conference this weekend, the Wild Things Conference at the UIC Forum. It's going to take place on Saturday. They will be doing a performance called Chicugly, Redefining Natural Beauty in Chicago. Emily's the chief curiosity correspondent for the Field Museum. She's also the host of Brain Scoop, the great YouTube channel that is still part of the Nerdfighter community. And Robbie Telfer is the Calumet Outreach Coordinator at the Field Museum and a longtime poet and host here in Chicago. All right, so let's talk about Chicugly. Where does this come from? I mean, you guys are just going to put ugly stuff on stage? And
well, I mean, besides ourselves. I feel bad that's called Redefining Natural Beauty because I've had all this plastic surgery.
Yes, you have. It looks okay.
Okay. I decided to go for 3 boobs.
Strong.
I really wanted the Total Recall look.
13 nipples like
13
a possum.
13 nipples like a possum. What a great transition. So, yeah, we're going to look at a lot of the ugly animals, plants, and fungi of the region. Possums are featured heavily in the piece that we're doing. Possums get a bad rap, man.
Yeah.
They're fascinating marsupials. They have 13 nipples in a circle on their stomachs.
Do they get bad rap because we live in Chicago and most of the people who are going to interact with a possum is in a very crabby way?
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Yeah,
I mean, I had one who lived behind an apartment when I was in college and it guarded the garbage.
Yeah, like, but imagine someone's like going into your room. 3 a.m. Yeah. They open the door and you don't know them. You didn't invite them there. I would hiss at them.
Yeah.
I would pass out. Like I would do those 2 things. I go, or I would pass out and lie on the ground and they stole all my stuff.
Well, I think so when we talk about like environmentalism and conservation, I think one of the first things that will come to somebody's mind is like a panda or tigers or whales
These
charismatic megafauna that make really good stuffed animals. But when it comes down to like what needs saving and what needs preserving, a lot of the times it's really hard to get public promotion for those things. It's like bivalves, you know, it's clams, it's insects and it's possums and a number
turkey
of these
vultures.
Other. Yeah, turkey vultures.
Turkey vultures are fascinating. I was going to talk about turkey vultures for a second. They're they're so objectively hideous. And, I love them. I think they're super important. They eat so much of our dead stuff. Without them, we'd have a lot more carcasses everywhere. So thank you, turkey vultures. But, you know, like, besides being physically unattractive, they also poop all over their legs. And scientists or people thought like, oh, this is to cool their legs or to cooling themselves off with their nice, cool poop and the wind blows on their poop legs. And they're like, this is turkey vulture air conditioning.
Life.
Yeah, exactly. And then they saw them doing it in the winter and they're like, oh, so that's not why they're doing that. And then they're like, oh, maybe they're creating some sort of microbial environment on their bodies that helps them protect from disease that they're eating all these corpses. And they're like, well, considering that they're shoving their faces in the corpses, including like
in the
bunghole of the corpse, you know, like they really should be pooping on their faces to protect themselves.
Right,
and
so
right now, as far as I know, as a non-scientist who just likes funny stories about ugly animals, they don't know why they do
know.
It.
They don't know.
And that's why we need people to look at the ugly animals.
You're right
because,
here.
Yeah.
Right now, we're asking for volunteers.
So do research.
To do some research. On
why vultures, turkey vultures poop on their legs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If you have the
call
answer out there, 312-981-7200. Maybe someone's got that information.
Yeah,
you know, they're
me.
Listening in Bolingbrook and they're like, I know that. No one wants to listen to me.
I've been pooping on my legs for years for the same reason.
And I've been to Bolingbrook. I know why that person there knows that, too.
Yeah,
no offense to Bolingbrook. I'm so sorry.
I mean, even without, like, I mean, there are those funny, like, scientific questions. But more than that, like, I wish more of these organisms were part of our normal lexicon in terms of, like, what we understood about our environments and the intricacies and the interrelatedness of them. I talk about clams all the time because
it's actually true. That is not a lie.
It is true. It's like in every conversation.
It's not like a character she's playing. It's like most of the things she says is about
have to do with clams.
Muscles.
And mussels and local mussels. And it's because, one, they have the worst names. I mean, they have names like pimple warty back and like snuff box, as though being associated with cancer is like really insightful for conservation. But they provide such an important natural function. I mean, they filter pollutants out of our rivers. They provide food sources. They have amazing life histories that involve like expelling their babies out of a siphon and hoping the right fish comes by so that the babies can clamp onto the gills and then drop off further down. I mean, it's just, like, amazing stuff.
They throw their babies at fish. What more do you need?
Exactly. But it has to be the certain kind of fish.
Oh, I know. We've had this conversation.
But many times. I got to get new material.
No,
but,
no.
But so it's just we want to celebrate the weirdness and the uniqueness, and again, like the product of evolution that has resulted in these weird.
Well, I always think about when I was like 12 or 13. I remember I got into this moment where I was like collecting these little whale like ceramics. You know, there were small guys, and I would go to my dad and I'd say, he grew up in Chicago, and I'd say, "Oh, Dad, you know, tell me about what you know about the dolphins or the whales." And he's like, and I remember this always stuck. He goes, "I grew up on Milwaukee Avenue. The only thing I know are the rats and the whatever goes down by the riverbed, you know, for the Chicago River." And I was like, and that's how he sort of explained what Chicago nature was in the way that, I mean, and I don't think he did it in a negative way. He's just like, I have no dolphin experience for you. And I think that that's what you think about when you think about nature in Chicago, this byproduct of what's happening with
urbanization
of the city.
But it's crazy once you start learning how to see it. There's a bird expert at the museum that is hilarious and weird, and he's like, if you go right now to Grant Park, they're gone, so you can't see them. But if you go right now to Grant Park at this one tree, if you look up it, you'll see a long-eared owl. And it's just going to be sitting there for a few weeks, and millions of people are walking by this bird.
They don't even notice it.
Same thing for your neighborhoods, you know? Like, I saw a red-shouldered hawk in my neighborhood, and it was making this weird sort of repeated call, going like, and it was like, if your concept of the universe doesn't include those things, your brain literally filters it out. It filters out information it doesn't have use for. But once you start noticing it and speak more languages of nature, it's everywhere. No offense to your dad, but he just wasn't looking good.
And it's funny because my dad is someone who grew up in the city who now lives out in the middle of the woods. I mean, it's his worldview has changed in the way that he's turkeys come up to the house, you know, like and birds and all that kind of stuff. And you're absolutely right. Like now he's toned into it. He can see it where I don't see. I come in from the city, you know, I'm a city kid. I come in and I'm like, what? I don't see it, Dad. What's for dinner? You know,
like, and that's the thing is, like, in just Chicagoland, there are so many weird. There are native orchids that live in the wild. There are mink that live in the city of Chicago. There are snapping turtles, giant snapping turtles that live here.
Oh, yeah.
There's a whole host of plants and animals that live inside the city limits. And you just got to learn how to see them.
Robbie, the last time, we'll wrap it up here, but the last time I talked to you, you were on this mission to change the state flower. There was this idea that, was it violet? Is that the...
The violet is still our state flower.
So it didn't work.
There's an update on this.
There's an update on this. So you wanted to change the state flower from the violet to the Kankakee mallow.
Yeah.
And you guys did a brain scoop on this. Talk about this mission.
Okay, so before I worked at the Field Museum, I wanted to change the flower, the state flower, to the Kankakee mallow because the Kankakee mallow is the only flower that's endemic to Illinois. That means it's only from Illinois. And, like, that's how Illinois could you get. Our state symbol sure, should right. represent the state that we're in, you know? Like, Venus flytraps are just from North Carolina, which is amazing, and I didn't know that until recently. And their, like, state wildflower is the Venus flytrap. And California has a California poppy, so why not us? So I did that. I did a radio show at your previous job. I don't know if we're allowed to talk about it. But cool. And I talked about the state flower campaign, and I called out the state rep, Kate Clunan, who is down by where the Kankakee mallow lives. And I was like, she hasn't answered my emails. Maybe big wildflower got to her. And then she sent me a Facebook message, and she's like, you got something to say to me? And I was like, no, ma'am, I'm sorry. It was just for effect. I'm really very weak. And we talked for a long time. She's on board. She submitted a bill to state assembly to change the state flower to the Kankakee mallow. Oh. And I don't know if it'll actually change the state flower because you need a lot more bipartisan support and the Illinois
supermajority
needs
what's happening.
A lot more help
right
now.
right. Not a priority.
Not a priority for some reason. But
included in an energy bill and it'll get through.
Yeah, exactly. Can we do the, was it? Was
nuclear
it?
Power yeah, and yeah, the yeah. state flower and then be like, got it. Done.
Yeah, totally. but yeah, what she's done then is she's gone to these habitat restoration work days we do on the island that the mallow is from. She's been an advocate for this flower and okay, so for example, in Brazil, the Atlantic coast of Brazil has 5,000 endemic flowers and plants. We have one. But the way that they've sort of approached conservation there, one strategy is to get the people from that place to care about and defend those things as unique to that place and, right. and be prideful of it. Be like, this is our flower. You don't have it. This is ours. It, I mean, if people got like as competitive as they do at sports for the native biota of their region, the world would be a much better
place.
Emily,
I'll give you the last word on this campaign. Do you, you think you're going to you guys be able to change the state flower?
Well, I'm totally sold. And yeah, we went down with Rob this summer to film it because the thing that he maybe you didn't mention was that this flower lives on one single island in the middle of the Kankakee River and was thought to potentially be extinct for a decade.
In the wild
until Rob and his volunteer group and people
the
from
volunteer the group I work with, not that I lead.
Right. So, but
very important.
Okay. But volunteers, people not getting paid to do this, spending a lot of their time and effort and energy helping to restore this island to its, you know, semi-natural state. And so I got the opportunity to go see this work and to document it and to see this flower blooming in the wild for one of the first times in decades, which is a pretty amazing and powerful thing to think that the world has been so destructive, but yet you have this tiny, mighty little flower that is trying to push on through. So, yeah, I mean, I'll
well, you could see the Kankakee Mallow episodes on Brain Scoop. Just go to YouTube, put in Brain Scoop. That's probably the best way to get there.
Yep.
Emily Grassley is the chief curiosity correspondent for the Field Museum. She's also the host of Brain Scoop. You can find that on YouTube. Robbie Telfer, a poet, who's also the Calumet outreach coordinator at the Field Museum. They're going to be doing a performance, if you will, at the Wild Things Conference this weekend, Saturday at the UIC Forum. The conference, the Wild Things Conference, I think you guys are in the morning, right?
This is the in the morning. And if you want more information about the conference or to see all the things you can do to get involved in nature in the region, visit wildthingscommunity.org.
There you go. Robbie, Emily, thanks for being here. Appreciate it.
Thanks so much,
thanks
Justin.
For having us.
A little science and nature for you. Those guys are great. Emily, it's amazing for people who know her work with Brain Scoop. She had done Brain Scoop, which was a video of log. It was a video blog of just sort of loving science and bringing science. And she got hooked up with John and Hank Green. And she became an overnight sensation in the way that she was, you know, like she said in the interview, an art student who was able to really sort of bring science in a fun way to a different generation. People who are, you know, part of the Nerdfighter community are usually younger teenagers, things like that. And the Field Museum picked her up and they sort of brought her in. She got the job off of that. So great to have her on. Love to have her back. We could talk science and nature. I said, you know what? I said it, Pete. You can play back the tape. I said at the beginning of the year, I said I would like to do more science, nature-y type stuff on the show.
You have.
Right?
Yes.
So we've had the Enrico Fermi biography, Emily and Robbie here. Still got to keep bringing it.
Yeah, maybe I'll attack a chemistry next.
Karen Lewis was a chemistry teacher before she was president of the union. So that was good. I just got a video. This is great. You'll love this. My buddy Tommy lives out in Colorado. He sent me a video of in his car. Right? 7:20 a.m. on the radio in Fort Collins, Colorado. And he could hear our show.
Wow.
Yeah, last night he sent it to me when the Karen Lewis interview was on, and I didn't see it till later. I was like, what is this? And then tonight, again, while we were doing the interview with Emily and Robbie, another video that said, wow, listen, it's clear as a bell in Fort Collins, Colorado right now. 7:20 WGN of Chicago. Isn't that crazy?
That's some reach.
It's 1,000 miles. That is reach.
Can't get it downtown.
If you're on Lower Wacker, you're like, I can't get it. I can't.
In Colorado, crystal clear.
Crystal clear in the mountains in Colorado. But if
that's
you want to go over to Clark and Lake, nah, you're out of luck. It is amazing, right? It's so fun. Yeah, it's amazing to think because I had another buddy of mine who was driving around in Dayton, Ohio. And he Facebook messaged me saying, I just turned on the radio and was scanning the AM thing and I heard your voice. It's amazing to think about. You know, I think at night you have a better chance of that happening because, you know,
it's clear.
It's clear. Mm-hmm. And if it's clear at night and it kind of flows till it hits mountains, you know, that whole thing. But still, I mean, it's amazing. It's amazing to think that people in Fort Collins, Colorado, are, you know, they're playing a little hacky sack. You know, maybe doing that thing with the two sticks and the ball. Mm-hmm. I don't know what that's called, whatever that's called. They got the dreadlocks, and they're on campus, Colorado State. You know, just thinking about drinking this craft beer while I play with my little sticks and the hacky sack. Oh, let's listen to 720, man. We should, man. Right? I'm assuming that's...
That's how it goes.
That's Fort Collins. And this to make it clear, this was not the app. Someone said, you can get GN anywhere with the app. I'm like, I understand that concept. I understand mm-hmm. the technology behind that. This was in a car radio listening to 720 mm-hmm. AM.
Saw the call letters on the dash.
Yeah. It's got that AM, that crisp, crinkly AM sound where I sound a little bit like that. Tell me again, Karen Lewis. What? But yeah, so amazing. So if you are listening in some area that's not Illinois, Chicago, and you want to let us know, let me know. Text 312-981-7200.
See if you can beat Fort Collins.
See if you can beat Fort Collins.
What's the mileage?
1,000 miles. I looked it up. It's like 990 miles.
All right. If you can beat 990, we'll give you a pizza tonight.
Oh, look at that.
I'm throwing out prizes.
These are not even on the prize list. This is just Pete saying, I will call up the local pizzeria.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And make it happen for you.
It's like a little AM radio throwdown here. All of a sudden, we're gonna start seeing KDKA in Pittsburgh.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, well, we reached that far too, you know.
Yeah, hey. Speaking of throwdowns, how about a hoedown? That's coming up in the 9 o'clock hour. The harmonica hoedown, Rob. How cool is that? Bob Kessler's here.
I'm good friends with Bob Kessler. He jams on that
he
thing.
He does.
Man.
As many people know him as the voice of WGN Radio News on the weekends, and he fills in when Rob's out here. His number one gig is being a harmonica player in Chicago. And he's got his trio here tonight and also a soloist. And we're going to talk about the harmonica hoedown, which is at Martyrs on February 28th. Looking forward to it. Also tonight, Sonia Denis, the hit web series. And I'm talking hit. Brown Girls. Last night it debuted. My Twitter feed just blew up. So many articles, so many people talking about what could be the next big thing out of Chicago. A web series that's shot in Pilsen, starring women of color, produced and written by women of color. Sonia Denis, who's been on our program, she's a Chicago comedian, is in it, and she is here tonight. And then also a special edition, 10 o'clock tonight, the frying pan. Local inventor Steve Gadlin has a new idea. We usually do it on the Fridays once a month, but because we're at the auto show tomorrow night, which is awesome, we'll talk more about that a little later. Steve is here tonight.
Didn't we have an Amber Alert out on Gadlin?
I think we did. For a good 6 months, there was an Amber Alert out.
I mean, I missed the guy.
We found him in the Walgreens across the way, just or like just with extra sort of extra size Skittles. He ate so many Skittles. That's what he brings in. Skittles and a Coke. That's what he brings in as his power food before he starts. So that's at 10 o'clock tonight. 312-981-7200. Elizabethtown, Kentucky. Just shy 400 miles away, born in Chicago. I got you driving all the way home to Charlotte, North Carolina once, through Virginia, West Virginia, Ohio, and Indiana. Wow. Asheville, Ohio. You come in clear from sunset to sunrise every night, Asheville, Ohio.
Great.
And then 312 says, right on Wacker. I can never get it on Wacker, so... Thanks, Rob. It's a download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman with you till 11 o'clock tonight. Oh, in studio. Now we're going to have some fun. Finally. All the other stuff, the talking politics.
More harmonicas than people.
More harmonicas which makes it fun. Than people. That has been the goal of the download since we started. We've got finally accomplished it tonight. The 6th annual Harmonica Hoedown is coming to Martyrs on February 28th. Martyrs at Lincoln Avenue up on the north side of Chicago. In studio tonight, the guys who really put it together, including our own here at WGN Radio, Bob Kessler, James Conway, and Graham Nelson, also part of the trio here. And Joe Felisco is here as well, a aficionado when it comes to the legend.
Legendary.
So you know what? Let's. I've always said this about my life. Less talk, more harmonica. So why don't we start with the trio? We'll do a live performance here. Bob, James, and Graham, here is the song Green Onions. Take it away, guys. Oh, Yeah. Woo! Hey! There we go. A harmonica hoedown for the WGN radio listeners tonight. Bob Kessler, James Conway, and Graham Nelson in studio performing as a trio. Also in studio, Joe Felisco, the aficionado, the legend. He'll be playing solo later in this segment. The 6th Annual Harmonica Hoedown is February 28th at Martyrs on Lincoln Avenue. Tell us, Bob, where did this come from? Where did the idea of doing a hoedown?
The idea came from me turning 40
okay.
a few years ago. I'm over 40 now. And I didn't want to have to go through the hassle of doing a birthday party and paying for it. And will anyone show up to my birthday party? So I thought, why don't I do a show? So that's what I did. And I mean, I'm not the first person to come up with this kind of harmonica showcase event. And so I just got the people that I loved there playing and got them to play. And I played. And it turned out great.
And it's the kind of thing, I was going to say, the kind of thing that every year you're like, let's do it again.
Every year. I have a birthday every year. It's not the reason.
That's a reason to keep doing
it
again and again.
It is not really that at all. There is a really awesome community around this instrument, and we're all friends because of it. That's how we know each other. But there's just a community between the audience. Some of the people in the audience are players, but not everybody. And what's really cool, I think, almost everybody has some kind of harmonica memory. Oh, my dad played it. You know, my late people come up to me all the time, and they are sentimental about it because they might not play, but someone that they know and love plays or might have played. So
let me ask you about the history, and I want to bring Joe in as well. I mean, we talk about this instrument, and I think of, obviously, it's very tied to the American blues in the way that it's been used often. But before, even before that time, talk about where the harp comes from. Talk about the harmonica and its origins. You want to take that one, Joe?
Certainly.
Joe is the man to take that one.
Professor.
The inspiration for the harmonica comes from a group of Asian mouth organs that go back thousands of years. Sometimes they're called the Shang or the Ken. And they are similar to the harmonica in that they are a free reed instrument, and you can produce sounds while inhaling and exhaling, and you can play a clean note or multiple notes, chords. The difference is that these older ones, you only have one hole that you breathe into, and you have to use your fingers. The principle of the harmonica, as it's obvious to anyone that has a harmonica or has held one, is there's multiple holes on the harmonica, and the vast majority of them also you can make sounds while inhaling or exhaling.
Right. You know, I guess the origin story comes from faraway lands and ancient history. When does it get to America? Who brings it here and makes it an instrument that is, like you said, sort of passed down from generation to generation?
Well, the first significant evidence of it being in America really is in the late 1800s. There was some craftsmen making harmonica-like things on the East Coast. But the real magic happens roughly about 1857. And about that time, a couple things were established. Number one, it became consistent that it was an inhaling and exhaling instrument. And number two, the tuning of the harmonica. It probably happened simultaneous to the way the tuning was developed on accordions. Mm-hmm. It was pretty much the same.
Yeah, right.
But the tuning of the harmonica really is critical for that bluesy or that country or that old-time folk sound.
Well, you mentioned those are three areas that I feel like the harmonica really shines. Country music, folk music, and the blues. Is there one that is more important to the history of the harmonica than another, or they sort of simultaneously came up at the same time being used in those different musical genres? Anyone could take that.
I guess I would like to say, based upon my understanding, is that the genre of blues music has longer accepted the harmonica as a legitimate instrument than any other genre. Other genres have had their peak, their hot time, but it didn't last as long as it has for blues.
In studio with me tonight, Joe Falisco, Bob Kessler, of course, James Conway, and Graham Nelson. Let's take a quick break. We'll come back, and then Joe, you're going to perform for us solo, and then we'll get one more from the trio. The Harmonica Hoedown, the sixth annual Harmonica Hoedown, will be at Martyrs on Lincoln Avenue in the North Side on February 28th. All right, we'll take a break. We'll come back. Stay with us. All right, we're having a Harmonica Hoedown here in studio, 720 WGN. The real Harmonica Hoedown is happening at Martyrs on February 28th, the sixth annual Harmonica Hoedown. In studio with me, Bob Kessler from WGN Radio News.
Howdy,
feel
howdy.
Like, can you get a cast in quick before we...
Can I? I probably could.
You probably
yes.
could.
I've done it. What are we coming up on 9:30? I could get it
you get
done
one in there. Good. Bob Kessler, James Conway, and Graham Nelson are in, as well as Joe Falisco, who's a solo harmonica. Do you say harmonica player? Do you say harmonicist? What do you say? Is there a fancy professional way to say harmonica player?
I like going by mouth organist.
Mouth organist. Yeah.
Mississippi
the legendary.
Sax player.
There you go. Mouth organist Joe Falisco. All right, so we had promised some music. Before we get to Joe, what's special about this year's Harmonica Hoedown?
A couple of things. What's always special to have Joe. He's been there since the beginning.
Yeah.
Graham and Jim have participated, but this is the first time we're doing it as a trio. You heard us do Green Onions. I'm playing bass, and Jim and Graham are playing various upper register, although Jim has a bass and chord harp, too. So we're doing trio work.
James has three harmonicas. As I watched you play that, you put all three in your mouth at the same time.
I was doing some chord work on the little diatonics there, switching, doing the chord part. Graham was doing lead for most of the tune, and... Bob on bass.
Holding down the line.
Awesome.
With the Crosby, Stills, and Nash of the harmonica.
I like that.
That's good. All right, so who's playing?
But also, so Joe's going to bring in Grant Dermody from Seattle. He's a great blues player. And then also P.T. Gazelle from Nashville. He's actually from the Milwaukee area. He had a big career in country. He was part of Johnny Paycheck's band back when Take This Job and Shove It was sweeping the land.
Awesome, yeah.
He actually left music for several years. 15 years or something, kind of gave it up and was working as a sound technician or something, had another job, didn't play at all, and came back because of there's a lot of interesting kind of technical developments with the instrument that came along that caught his ears. And so he started playing more jazz. And PT's an awesome player, so he's coming up from Nashville. So
all
it's
right,
really special
so you got
to have
some, some big dogs at the sixth annual Harmonica Hoedown, Feb 28th at Martyrs. All right, Joe Falisco, you ready to jam?
Sure.
All right, here's Joe. What are we going to hear?
Well, I'm going to do a little medley of things to show you some of the other personalities that the harmonica has.
All right, Joe Falisco live in studio here on 720 WGN. Take it. Thank you. what I'm talking about. Wow. That is unbelievable. Joe Felisco in studio on the harp. Is the harp the right? Am I right on that? Okay, good, guys. That's amazing. Yeah, there you go. The legendary mouth organist, Joe Felisco. That was tremendous. I want to ask about that because there seems to be much more than just, you know, inhaling and exhaling. You use your hands. You're able to sort of manipulate the sound. Talk about that. When you're a harmonica player, it's not just about controlling your breath.
Breath control is certainly part of it. I guess I like to say, at least with the style that I play in, which is very chordal, and by the way that I'm using my tongue, it's very much comparable to the way that a guitar player or piano player may actually use his fingers, by the way I'm using it to cover holes and then uncover holes and expose chords. And then there's other, you know, manipulations. The hands create resonance. You can get a brighter sound if your hands are open, and a more mellow, resonant, thicker sound if your hands are closed behind it, around it, and it's all trickery.
Joe Felisco in studio. You can see him at the 6th Annual Harmonica Hoedown, which is February 28th at Martyrs. Also in studio, Bob Kessler, James Conway, and Graham Nelson. Guys, you were playing as a trio. When we talked about the instruments, I mean, it almost sounded like a rock band. You had a bass, you had the three different harmonicas you were playing there, and also the lead. I mean, is it easy or hard to play together as a band when you're playing the harmonica?
No, I mean, it's kind of like having a really wonderful marriage of three people.
There you go. I mean, it is a rock band. You're going to have a drummer, and right, he'll keep you in line. So we don't have that. So that rhythmic function falls largely on the bass, but not always. Mm-hmm. So you do have to really kind of be conscious of where the beat is, where the pocket is.
Right. And
so it is challenging.
And you have the bass harmonica, yeah, which is a huge, I've never seen a harmonica
it's like
that
a sandwich
big.
Sized.
It looks like a, like, yeah. It looks like an extra large, like, whatchamacallit.
Whatchamacallit bar. Yeah, it does. And this actually is the G, so it goes down to G below middle C, or the G below that, I think.
Wow.
They make one that goes down to E that's even larger.
And then, James, you're playing three different harmonicas. I mean, you had in the track we heard, we're going to hear another one, but you were actually playing all three of them almost simultaneously.
I had them, yeah, in between my fingers here, and just using, it was a 12-bar blues we were playing, and just each harp has a different chord. Just switch. Kind of a visual treat too. So
and Graham, so I'll ask you about, I mean, all harmonica, do all our harmonica players want to play lead?
Well, I mean, you know, it depends on what you're doing. There's a grand tradition of harmonicas of being in between vocals and commenting. I think harmonica is kind of a commenting sort of instrument. It mirrors, it mimics, it induces, it entices. But, you know, at the end of the day, we all lead our own charge once in a while.
There you go. The 6th Annual Harmonica Hoedown, February 28th at Martyrs, featuring WGN Radio's own Bob Kessler, James Conway, Graham Nelson, and Joe Felisco in studio. Thanks to everybody. Let's hear, you guys can take us out, the trio. What are we going to hear here?
What do you think?
We're going to do June Apple. We've made that decision in the
morning.
Because it's February.
Here's June Apple. You're on 720.
Get all our gear ready for this one.
Okay. WGN, take it away, guys.
Take us out, Graham. Thank you.
Riot, some harmonica. Bob Kessler, James Conway, and Graham Nelson performing as the trio. Joe Felisco also in studio. The 6th annual Harmonica Hoedown, going to be February 28th at Martyrs up on Lincoln Avenue in the North Side. Guys, thanks so much for coming in tonight. Appreciate
thanks
it.
Thanks for having us. Always good to see you, Justin.
Thank you.
Welcome back to Download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. Well, this week, a new web series debuts, shot right here in Chicago. It's called Brown Girls, and it features two roommates living in Pilsen, navigating life, livelihoods, and love.
It wasn't going to ever work out anyway.
Yep.
I mean, let's be honest. That was crazy out the gate.
Yeah.
Remember that time she stalked you to Mark's house? And you had to f***ing lie? Like on some fifth grader Like on some... Oh, he's a coworker, and we're just working on a presentation.
Yeah. To be fair, I was hooking up with him. I shouldn't have been doing that.
That's beside the point. You shouldn't have been doing it because he's 15 years older than you, your boss, and has a wife.
That's beside the point.
Brown Girls is getting major buzz and great press for its real-life feel, an authentic story following two women of color living life in their 20s. And in tradition of recent television hits like Atlanta or Insecure, it's a story that features women of color, written and directed by women of color. The series is created by Fatima Asghar and Sam Q. Bailey, and it stars Nabila Hossein and my next guest, Sonia Denis. Sonia is a Chicago comedian who's currently living and working in New York City. She was named one of Comedy Central's 2016 comics to watch. She's performed all over town, all over the country. She's going to be at the Paper Machete at the Green Mill this Saturday afternoon, and she has been a guest on this program before. She played The Worst with us. Sonia, great to see you. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me
And congrats on the web series.
Yeah, thank you.
Where did
you.
This come from? I've known you as a comedian, and this is, I mean, it's a comedy, but it's much more dramatic.
Yeah.
Talk about how you got involved in this.
Well, I knew, I met Sam like a few months before I moved to New York. So I moved to New York in August. This web series was actually shot from August 1st to the 15th, and I was actually supposed to leave August 1st, but I met Sam. Like, I was doing a show at Second City called Afrofuturism,
right,
and
course,
we had
yeah.
mutual friends, and then she and I hung out, and we just had similar sensibilities with, like, art and books and all these things. And then the person who was actually supposed to play the character I played, Patricia, dropped out last minute because she had a bigger opportunity, and Sam was like, I know you're supposed to leave, but, like, do you want to just do this? And I was like, yeah, okay. And so then I did, yeah. So that's how I got in it.
It's a great story, and all of the reviews that are coming in are really about its authenticity, the idea that this is, you know, it's shot in Chicago, it's shot in Pilsen and around Chicago. But talk about, you know, how much of it, as someone who lived in Chicago as long as you have, but now living in New York City, how much of it is, does it feel real to you?
Oh, absolutely. I think like a lot of our shots were in Pilsen, and it was like, and I hate to say this because it's so cliche, but it's kind of like how Atlanta, the fourth character, because there's three main characters, the fourth character is sort of Atlanta. We felt that way about Chicago because so much of the portrayal is like the Republicans or different people saying there's so much gun violence in Chicago, or there's like Oprah's Chicago, which is like the Magnificent Mile. But there's so much. Chicago's huge, and there's so much more to that. So we wanted to show Pilsen and neighborhoods like that where people like the two characters live.
For you, you know, as a comedian and someone who's done a lot of comedy work, was it a challenge to move into sort of a written script kind of dramedy, if you will?
Yeah, absolutely. Just because, well, in my stuff, I write my own things, and then it's I'm very punchline heavy. I do talk about some of the things that are covered on Brown Girls, but it was a different process, and I was just so amazed. Like, Sam Bailey is just, she already did another web series called You're So Talented, so she had expertise in this and, like, experience, and, like, everyone from, like, the AD to the sound person to the people who did light. Like, I was just, I had no experience with TV at all, and I was just astounded by how professional everyone was, even though we're all like technically amateurs. But it was great. Yeah, I learned so much, and I feel like it expanded.
Talk about the idea of getting along with Sam and, and getting the role. But what was it about the project? I mean, this the concept of two roommates, you know, in their 20s, living in Pilsen, trying to navigate everything that comes with that. What was it about the project that drew you to it?
Yeah, I just feel like the biggest thing is that you don't really see comedies or dramedies like this. You might see friendships with two women, but they're definitely, they're rarely two women of different races. Mm-hmm. And they're rarely relationships where Nabila's character is queer. She is trying to figure that out and navigate that by also being a first generation immigrant and like all the baggage that comes with your parents' expectations while also being a person in her mid-20s trying to figure out her life. And then also like Patricia really spoke to me just because I relate to her. She's a lot harder than I am. Like externally, I'm very much a people pleaser, but she's not. She's very like point blank. That scene where she was like, get out. There's a Tinder date. This was fun, but now it's time to go. Like, I'd be like,
there's a statute of limitations.
Yeah,
on that,
exactly.
Right.
But I would be like, I'd sleep in my living room or something on the couch.
You'd stay for the pancakes.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Like, okay. Even if I hated it. But I think Patricia is a lot of women, and specifically like a lot of Black women, where they feel like they have to be hard. They have to, because in the same way, not to be like political, but like that Hillary Clinton couldn't cry or be upset because she had to be tough. I think Patricia feels like she has to put on that sort of front. But then later, as you see the characters develop, she kind of accepts that it's okay to be vulnerable and hurt.
Is that hard as an actress to play? I mean, you know, when you think about the arc, you know at a certain point that you have to have this tough exterior. That's part of the character to begin with. And you know as the series goes on that that's going to have to melt away.
Right.
As an actress, is it talk about how you approach the idea that you know at a certain point you're going to have to give up that characteristic.
Yeah, no, it was really, I'm super grateful that this was like the first experience I had being on camera, just because, as I mentioned, like because so many of the people on the project look like me, are women, people of color, queer, etc. It just felt like a comfortable environment to like explore. So like Nabila's done more acting than me. There's several other women, like the actress who plays my mom has done so much acting. So I could talk to them and be like, how do you do this? Because it is a hard thing to be like,
when's the punchline? When's the
punchline?
Where's
the
lights?
Exactly. Right. I'm also like very goofy and high energy, and that's not the character. So I had to be like more like, she's still funny and witty and sharp, but she's not loose.
Right.
So yeah, it was a lot of just prepping and sort of making choices that later wouldn't contradict the storyline as it went along.
We're talking with actress and comedian Sonia Deniz. She is the star of Brown Girls, which is the new web series, which you can find at Brown. Just Google it. You'll find it. But it's also at Elle Magazine.
Like we have one episode.
Of it. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's getting a lot of great reviews. People are very, I mean, it's great that, I mean, not too many web series are going to get, you know.
Yeah, we're
in
so overwhelmed.
The same breath as shows like Atlanta or Insecure. There's something empowering about the concept of telling these stories of two women in their 20s, you know, living life in their own skin.
Right.
But it's also, there's something empowering about the idea that this is women of color created this, directed this, produced it, put it forward. I mean, is that important for you as an actress, as someone who gets involved in a position like this?
Yeah, I've only been doing stand-up for 5 years, which isn't a long time, but I've definitely realized that you have the most power if you are a creator. Because a lot of Hollywood, if you go into an audition, 70% of roles are for white men. And even like, even if they're the 30%, there's like, what's your gender? What's your height? Do you fit someone's vision of what this is? But if you are someone like Tina Fey, for example, or Amy Poehler, they create vehicles for themselves to tell their stories, and then they cast themselves. I just think it's bad to sort of wait to see if someone else will create a show like Brown Girls when we can just make it and cast it and produce it and have it look as good as it does.
It's striking. I mean, Sam
did a
tremendous
job. Yeah, I'm so amazed
by
everyone, even from Sam to Hannah Weaver, who's like the person who was like the AD and colored everything. Like, it's tremendous.
And it also, we talk about this a lot on the show. I mean, this week we had a couple of kids from Lane Tech who are doing a theater show at Prop Theater for Rhino Fest, you know, 17 or 18 year old kids. But there's something about Chicago that the major through line for people who do art in this town is the hustle.
Oh, absolutely.
And this, you just said it right there, the idea that you can't wait for someone to bring you a project like Brown Girls. You have to go out and create it.
Yeah, and that's a very Chicago thing. Even, I mean, aside from just this web series, when I was doing stand-up, a lot of the shows I did were DIY shows where comedians would go to a bar, or even there was one at a sex shop, or like we did one at a hair salon.
Yeah,
like anywhere. And the comedians just were like, we're going to put on this show. We're going to collect donations. We're going to set up everything ourselves, as opposed to just relying on great institutions like Laugh Factory and Zany's. But like that's definitely a Chicago thing. Even music, Jamila Woods did all the music for the show. She's from Chicago.
She plays a huge role. I was reading the story that this, your character is essentially based on Jamila Woods.
She tweeted today that I was her twin, and I was like, oh my God, I love you so much.
did you? I mean, that's such a weird. I mean, that's a living, you know, creative person.
Yeah.
I mean, do you think about that? That you're actually playing someone who could be, you know, two doors down from you at this
Absolutely.
Point?
You know, and I knew Jamila before the show because I actually ended up opening for her album release party. And she's amazing. Like, anytime I feel like doing her show and watching her and her work, and then the fact that she created all the music you're going to hear on the show by, like, with other people, but just original music completely and totally, the theme song, all of it. I definitely wanted to portray her and Fatima's friendship in the best way. And I feel like Nabila and I clicked too in that way, where we're both very similar. Like, she's very high energy and goofy like I am. So we definitely had that chemistry.
Okay, so for you and your career, and you've done stand-up in Chicago, and you moved to New York.
Yep.
Like I said, you the 2016 Comics to Watch, Comedy Central. Does this change your trajectory? Do you say, okay, I've had success with this web series where I acted a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I got this stand-up thing unlocked. Maybe I'll try a little bit more of this dramedy stuff.
Yeah, I've definitely actually. Okay, so when I moved to New York, I have like representation now, which sounds gross to say, but
that's good. So gross.
But I've been doing, the industry, yuck. But I've been doing like more auditions for stuff. This is like pilot season or whatever. So I'm definitely trying to get on a show. And I wrote a pilot. Like, I want to write and act in addition to stand up, which will always be my base. But I'm so inspired by Fatih and Sam just creating art in this genre.
Being in New York, I mean, you're closer to industry.
Absolutely.
Is that the reason that you moved?
Absolutely.
Out of Chicago?
Yeah, I love Chicago so much. And I think it's definitely a shame that the great thing about Chicago is like what you were mentioning about like the DIY hustle, and there's so many opportunities to get good, because here there is no industry, which is beneficial in one way because you can work on things and
get
better.
That's why you have to be hustle. That's why it's hustle, right?
Yeah, you have to hustle, but also there's no one watching you mess up and be bad and like all of those things. You get to try things you wouldn't try if you had industry eyes on you, and then you show up in New York and you're already polished. And that's the thing too, like I've gotten negative feedback occasionally from people who are like, ugh, another Chicago comic. But it's like, what choice do we have? It's L.A. or New
Why
York.
Why New York over L.A.? Why did you choose New York?
I love L.A., but I feel like L.A. is more of a, what project do you have to present? Do you have a TV show? Do you have a film? And whereas there's more opportunity to do stand-up in New York, and I kind of just wanted to have my base and be able to get up and do shows and get paid for that and then explore acting and writing in a safe space without feeling like if I was in LA, like, oh my God, I have to make something work with a pilot or something because I'm going up like two or three times a week.
Right.
Whereas in New York, you can go up just as much as you can in Chicago, but get paid more.
That's always good.
Yeah.
Sonya Denise, my guest tonight, she is starring in the new web series Brown Girls, which is getting a ton of great reviews. And you can find it online. Just look up Brown Girls. But it's also in Elle Magazine this week. They're premiering the episode. So much great stuff. Sonya Denise, now in New York. She's one of Comedy Central's 2016 Comics to Watch. And, you know, you can check her out this Saturday afternoon at Paper Machete at the Green Mill.
Yeah.
Sonya, great to see you.
Thank you so much for having me on, Justin.
You think you
always good to have people who've been on the program before when they start to blow up. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like Sonya Denise, not only Comedy Central's, you know, comics to watch, but to be on Brown Girls, which is, I mean, it's being compared to Insecure, which is a show, Issa Rae show on HBO, or Atlanta, which just came, won a slew of Golden Globes. It's a web series, but mm-hmm. It's shot here in Chicago, and I really like it because what I really liked about it is it had a real, like, authentic feel. I don't know much about Pilsen, meaning I don't know much about the sort of millennials and the generations that are, they're kind of living life in their 20s,
mm-hmm.
You know, because I'm so esteemed. But, you know, watching, I was like, yeah, man, you know, like, you're going to know this life because I was once 20. And you kind of, you know, like, things have changed, but they haven't. It's the same
stuff. Yeah, it's the same stuff.
I'm not a brown girl, but at the same time, I get it.
There's a great show on HBO called High Maintenance. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you ever saw that.
That's even...
And it started as a web series, yeah. And I watched the web series, and I'm like, oh, this is great. And then all of a sudden I see HBO has it and picking up new episodes. I could totally see somebody doing that with this series. That's how good it is.
What I really like about it, and I'd love for you guys to watch it, go find it, just Google Brown Girls and watch the series. Because what I really, really enjoy about it is the shots, like the cinematography of it. A lot of shots of Chicago that aren't the normal shots. We kind of talked about it with Southside with you, the director, when they did the Obama date movie, remember?
Right.
And how it's not just the shot of the lake or the shot of the Sears Tower, or, you know, that kind of stuff. Like, there's some really great shots in Pilsen that are framed artistically that you get to see a neighborhood that's turning over, or the sort of, you know, the crumbling infrastructure around it as she rides her bike past it.
Yeah.
It's just like it's really a cool shot of Chicago that you don't see that often. So as she said, I mean, Chicago kind of plays a role in it, so it's pretty cool. So it's pretty cool they could pull that for the pull quote. It's pretty cool, Justin Kaufman.
Put it on the back of the video box.
Of the Blu-ray. And then in 10 years, we'll be Greg Flam. We're like, I've got a Web Girls. It says, it's pretty cool, Justin Kaufman. Is that worth anything? Oh, it's about $15. All right, coming up tonight, special edition of The Frying Pan. Inventor Steve Gadlin is in the house. Of course, we do this Friday nights at 10 o'clock, and we've been doing it. This is only the second time we have done it in 2017. We've moved to a once-a-month sort of formula. We can't do it tomorrow night because tomorrow night we... That was a terrible... That was like a more of a steel drum roll. Like,
it's going to be warm this weekend. We'll get the holiday or the island spirit already.
Yeah, that's right. We'll bring the island spirit to the Chicago Auto Show. Mm-hmm. We will be live at the Chicago Auto Show from 7 to 10 tomorrow night. And we're going to have some good stuff. We'll talk about cars. We'll talk about the auto industry. Mike Fouché is going to join us. We'll do a week in review. So we got a lot of stuff to do. And my favorite part, which I kind of wanted to, I push back on having any guests because I'd rather have Pete Zimmerman with the wireless mic interview all the people who sell stuff at the auto show like he did last year. The churro woman. I mean, I fought WGN management for award season for the Pete Zimmerman interviews, the churro lady. It was so good.
I hope she's back.
I hope she's back. And I hope she's as disinterested as she was last year. I mean, I've never seen someone so disinterested in a microphone. Usually when you go talk to somebody, like, oh, this is out of the ordinary. This is an awkward experience. It doesn't happen to me usually. She didn't even look up. Hey, yeah. It's loving. So I can't wait. So we will be back at the auto show tomorrow. But coming up at 10 o'clock, Steve Gadlin in The Frying Pan, 312-981-7200.
We will give you a beautiful 7 3/4 inch fry pan free of charge.
It's 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman, and it's time to put the Shark Tank Steve Gadlin into the frying pan. Gadlin is the brain behind the successful local business IWantToDrawACatForYou.com. He presented his business idea on the television program Shark Tank, and he snagged Mark Cuban as a principal investor. So now Steve has to go back to Cuban with new ideas. Before he goes into that pressure cooker, he comes to WGN Radio to jump into the frying pan. Yeah. He's given us his exclusive business idea so we could poke holes in it and give Steve the confidence to pitch it to Cuban himself. Steve Gadlin, welcome back to the frying pan, my friend.
Thank you. Thanks for having me, Justin.
And thanks for coming on a Thursday. I know Friday's your night, and it's great to have you here on a Thursday.
You know, I'll tell you, Thursday, what you're getting is an idea that's not fully baked, but I still think it's ready for your listeners to help me pick this one apart.
Okay, well, that's the name of the game. That's what we do here. You can text, you can call in, 312-981-7200. And, you know, we try our best to be objective.
Sure.
And to also give constructive criticism to the ideas that Steve puts forth. I mean, we last year talked about it, and partially why we took the fall off was a little bit because just a little bit of burnout and a little self-confidence because of the way that people were responding. But
well,
and
the
you're ready to
issue.
Go. What was it?
That heartburn issue.
Yeah. Well, that's what I mean. It sort of came from the stress of doing this.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. You know, today, though, what I like to do is start my pitch with two absolutes.
Okay.
Absolute statements that no one can argue with. The first one is, everybody hates allergies.
Yes.
And I'm talking about pollen allergies, the kind you get in the spring or the fall, tree pollen.
Flowers.
Everybody hates allergies. Second statement I'm going to say is everybody loves clowns.
Okay, that's debatable, but I would say the majority of people understand the clowns, point of a clown.
Clowns, you know, at least what a clown represents, which is fun and happiness and joy.
Okay.
What I've done is I've invented something to help free you of those tree pollen allergies, and I'm calling this invention clownlergies.
Clownlergies.
Yeah. Now, clownlergies is a red foam nose cover, the same kind that clowns wear.
Right.
You put right over your nose, and what we've put into this red foam accoutrement is a lot of pollen filtering materials, so that tree and flower pollen doesn't get into your nasal cavity. And you can wear one. It's designed to wear. You put it on when you wake up in the morning. You take it off when you go to bed at night. You can wear it just one. You only have to buy one for an entire season. So spring or fall, wherever your allergies take effect, you wear that the clownlergies nose filter for the entire season, and you are free from pollen allergies.
Okay, I've got some questions.
Okay.
But as we do here, I like to let the listeners drive this segment. 312-981-7200 is the phone number to call. Also, you can text in at that line, 312-981-7200. What do we think of the idea of clownlergies?
Yeah, you know, and forget sneezing, forget itchy eyes, because none of that pollen's going to affect you. Mm-hmm. What you've got is something you're going to wear that's going to make the people around you smile. You know, it'll remind them to laugh in case they're suffering from allergies. And clownlergies, the clownlergies nose filtering system, is just a fun thing to wear. And due to patented chemicals that we have right baked into the middle there, none of that tree pollen is going to make it to your nose.
So not unlike the same kind of technology that might be used when it comes to Breathe Rights or that kind of stuff, where you're messing with the nose and the nasal cavity.
Breathe Rights, those just sort of stretch out or collapse your nostril area. What this does is any air you take in through your nose is filtered through these special chemicals that we have inside this red foam. But because we understand that walking around with a nose filter is kind of it's a bummer, and it's not, you know, not always fashionable to put a hefty, and it's heavy, to put a heavy filter on your nose. You know, it's one added pound of weight to your face, basically. But what we do is, by mimicking the clown nose, we make it a happy thing, something that's fun to pop on in the morning and something that's fun to pop off at night.
Okay, so clownlergies, a red-nosed nasal cavity filter that blocks out allergens that you can wear.
Primarily
and
tree
also,
and flower pollens.
It's very, it's a clown nose. It's like a red, it's like the red nose. It's sort of a nod, if you will, to the clown.
Well, it's, you know, you're taking away something everyone hates, pollen allergies, and replacing it with something everyone loves, clowns.
312-981-7200 is the phone number. Let's open up the lines now. 312-981-7200. What do we think, Download Nation? Yay or nay on clownlergies? Would you be in? I mean, it affects a lot of us. Allergies are a big issue. Is this something that you could see going to market that could help you if it actually relieved you of some of the issues with your allergies? 312-981-7200. We'll take a break. We'll come back. More with Steve Gadlin here on The Frying Pan, Clownlergies.
We will give you a beautiful 7 3/4 inch fry pan free of charge.
Yes, that's right. It's a special edition of The Frying Pan here on The Download. Steve Gadlin in studio Thursday nights, because tomorrow we are going to be live at the auto show. So Steve came in tonight, got his idea ready a day early. And that idea tonight is clownlergies. Tell us a little bit about clownlergies.
Yeah, so clownlergies, again, erases something you hate, which is those allergies to tree and flower pollens. And it gives you something everyone loves, which is a clown. It's a red nose filter that looks just like a clown nose, a little heavier, a little larger, but it clips right over your nose. And by breathing through the Clown Lurgy's nose filtering system, all of those pollens are filtered out and just collect inside the nose apparatus. So you're allergy-free.
Right.
You're allergy-free.
Okay, a lot of questions. 312-981-7200. You can text or you can call. Yay or nay on Clown Lurgy's. And if you have any questions for the inventor, he's in studio, Steve Gadlin. Let's go to the line. Let's go to Alex. Alex, start us off tonight with a frying pan. Alex, what do you think? Yay or nay on Clown Lurgy's?
Nay, completely terrible. Everyone hates clowns. It's scary, it's creepy, and no one's going to walk around with a red nose all day long.
Okay, well, I would push back. I don't mind clowns, but we're talking about like very simplistic kind of clown. There's no makeup and weird face. This is just a nose.
Well,
like
there is some makeup you have to put under your eyes to sort of shield your skin from it sort of overlaps under your eyes. So there is some makeup you need to put on.
This cannot be real.
Yeah.
Well yeah, it's real, and it's
completely creepy. It's pollen, not pollen, but it's creepy.
Well, tree pollen and flower pollen. We're going to protect thousands of people.
Talking about just the pronunciation of the word. I was going to say something, but anyway, moving on. Joy, how are you, Joy? Thanks for calling in.
I'm bordering on magnificent right now. I love mimes. I'm not a big fan of clowns. I've done singing telegrams for years, so I happen to always carry a round nose eclipse on like that with me, just for kicks. I also wear pigtails, and I'm not 5 years old, for the same reason that you're saying. People see that red nose, it reminds them of Rudolph. It reminds them of not icky clowns necessarily. It just makes people smile.
Right. That's what I thought, too.
Two real quick tweaks. I think if you're bringing this to Mark Cuban, like for real, Clown Lurgy's is the combination of clown and allergies, but it doesn't roll off the tongue. I'd say like Clownergies.
Clownergies.
Because it's like clown energy, but it's allergies. The Clown Lurgy's doesn't feel...
Well, I'm really trying to invoke the sensation of allergies, not just urgies. Yeah. So I want to keep it Clown Lurgy's.
Clown Lurgy's. Mm-hmm. One other thing is wherever you make it, I know the thing that I have, the little rubber nose, is probably made in China.
Yeah.
I'm sure you would do your due diligence and make sure the product, that there's not weird chemicals.
We had this issue before, Joy.
I wouldn't call them weird chemicals, but they're, in order to properly filter out that tree and flower pollen, you need some pretty caustic chemicals.
I think she's also talking about
built into the filter.
The idea that, you know, the red nose that you make, make sure that's not made in situations that they may use bad chemicals for that.
Well,
because then it's like it's sort of striking out the idea. It kind of cancels out the idea that you are got good allergy protection, but then you have bad chemicals on your face.
You know, I'd say a main purpose of creating this product is profit. And as I pitch this to investors like Mark Cuban, I can't buy special boutique manufacturing just to knock a few chemicals out of the thing for comfort and safety.
All right, let's get to some of these texts that are coming in. Also, 312-981-7200 is the phone number. First of all, this is from 773. Mm-hmm. First of all, it might work in a house, but people will think I'm a wacko if I walk around outside with that thing on my nose. And secondly, you are wrong about everyone liking clowns because I am terrified of clowns.
Okay, so we found the exception. But I also want to say, you know, this comes up with a lot of my inventions. People say, hey, I'm not going to be caught walking around with a funny red nose on. People will think I'm crazy. And again, that's what people thought about blue jeans when the first person wore blue jeans. That's what people thought about shoes and earrings. You know, there are millions of allergy sufferers in the world today, and I'm targeting each and every one of them. And I promise you, if 50% of the people on the street are wearing clown noses, no one's going to have the guts to tell them they look silly.
Okay. 773 says, nay, what if you work at a funeral home? You can't spell funeral without fun. I don't think it works. I think they got the pun in there, but I think that it was sandwiched with, I don't think it works.
So I think their concern is that there are times when levity isn't appropriate, and I'd just like to challenge that notion.
Okay. Duly noted. 312-981-7200. 630 says, great idea. It does two jobs for me. It not only helps with my allergies, but my nose is red from all the drinking that I do. So that'll cover it up for
me. Well, this will cover it up. I mean, your nose will still be red, but people will see it as an intentional act of redness, not one caused by drinking.
Okay. 630 has a question. Clownergies?
Clownergies.
Okay, clownergies. Mm-hmm. Did he mean allergens? It's a bad idea, and I hope he feels bad for thinking of it, but that's different. Those are two different things.
Yeah, so clownergies, the clownergies nose filtering system is meant to block allergens, such as tree pollens or flower pollens, from entering your respiratory system.
Okay, there's a lot of people that are just really just texting in about pronunciation, and we'll get to that. I want to save that because that seems
pronunciation.
To me. Right. 708 says, I think the clown nose is much better and happier idea than the people that walk around wearing those SARS masks that make you think you're going to catch something from standing near them. So, yay.
Yeah, that's a really good point. I know some people have tried to solve this problem with those hospital masks that they put over their faces.
Right.
But, you know, while that may filter out some of the allergens, what it doesn't filter out is paranoia.
Well, that's a good, that's a great point. I mean, I mean, couldn't you find yourself competing for that kind of customer, for a product for that kind of customer, a customer who already is in a position where they're wearing those kind of masks? You see one of those people in a train station or on an airline, and you wonder why. Mm-hmm. I mean, this could be something that could compete or replace that concept.
Yeah, you know, it actually, a lot of, you know, yeah, there will be some overlap with those customers. We're really focusing on the allergy market now. You know, one thing, when you're wearing the Clownergies nose filter, it's very hard to breathe through your nose. So it actually encourages a lot of mouth breathing. And the mouth has its own built-in filters to block out pollens from the respiratory system. So, you know, that's part of it too. Some of it is that chemical filter that we put in there. But some of it is just because of how tight it fits over your nose, it really discourages nasal breathing altogether.
Oh, okay. That's new. That's something that was not brought up at the beginning. All right. Well, that, I don't know if that changed. Maybe it changes. 312-981-7200. Keep them coming. 262 says, I love the idea. Besides, who's going to notice the red nose? And most of the people who stumble out of Chicago bars already have red noses. That was the same concept. There's a lot
That's
of
funny.
Red nose drinking references.
Yeah, one I hear a lot when I talk to my friends is, well, all those politicians are clowns anyway, right? So, you know, a lot of politicians in Chicago.
708 says, it's like Patch Adams had the right idea all along, the clown nose.
Well, Patch Adams wore an eye patch, and this is different. Now, we are working on an eye patch product to help some of the red eye that comes along with some of these pollen allergies, but unlike Patch Adams, this will be more of a clown nose apparatus.
262 says, I can see this getting full of mucus and becoming a big mess. And why wear it if you can't breathe out of your nose?
Well, you can breathe out of your nose. It just discourages nasal breathing. So there's a difference. We're not telling people not to breathe through their nose. We're just making it difficult. And while it will collect mucus, you have to remember the spongy material really soaks that up. So, you know, again, it starts out about 1 pound on your nose. It can collect maybe another pound or two of mucus before it becomes uncomfortable to wear. And it wicks it away from the face on toward its edges, so you don't feel that wetness pushing up against your skin in tests.
Okay. All right. And 773 says, Patch Adams was played by Robin Williams, and he did not wear an eye patch. He wore a red nose.
No, I think they're thinking of the wrong movie. Patch Adams was definitely, he was played by Robin Williams. He wore an eye patch, though. That's why they called him Patch Adams. Short for Eye Patch Adams.
Oh. Yeah. 630, Clownergies sounds like a great way to prevent sneezing on the cartridge screen.
Oh, that's good. Well, it would. It would prevent. A lot of people will wear them while they drive. And if you turn on that air conditioning to get that extra filtering in the car, then it's actually a great option.
630 wants to know if you've thought about different colors. Does it have to be red? Maybe you can play a black one for black tie affairs or more morose like funerals, things like that.
Yeah, well, here's where I have to get a little real. Now, we picked red for a couple of reasons. One, some of the chemicals that we use to help with that pollen filtering are naturally red, and to add dyes to them would make them too caustic to touch human skin. The other thing is, people know this with allergies, there's nasal bleeding sometimes, and that happens anyway for people with allergies. It has nothing to do with our product. So we've noticed some of the people wearing it have that natural hay fever nose bleeding, and the red helps mask that.
Natural hay fever? What?
Well, anyone with hay fever knows that nosebleeding, frequent nosebleed, is a big part of it. So it's definitely not caused by the Clownlurgy's nose filtering system. It's something they'll be experiencing anyway. So we like to keep that red to sort of mask that blood.
Hmm. All right. Okay. Well, in studio with me, Steve Gadlin, his latest invention, Clownlurgy's, is up for debate right now. Download Nation, yay or nay. We're getting a lot of nays, but a couple of yays. They like the concept. I think there is still still sort of an idea that there seems to be a need for this kind of product because there are a lot of people who suffer from allergies.
Yeah.
Steve Gadlin, of course, the frying pan fame, and he's usually on Fridays. He's on Thursday tonight as we move around our schedule for the auto show. We'll take a quick break. We'll get an update from Rob Martyr, and we will come back. I need some more yays or nays on this because I'm still not sure where we stand. 312-981-7200. Stay with us.
We will give you a beautiful 7¾-inch fry pan free of charge.
Thanks, Rob. It's a download here, 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. In studio with me for the frying pan, a special edition here on Thursday night instead of Friday night, the inventor, Steve Gadlin. He won on Shark Tank for IWantToDrawACatForYou.com. He now has a development deal with Mark Cuban, and the idea is that he needs to bring new ideas to Mr. Cuban. Before he does that, he brings it here so the Download Nation can get a little yay or nay, a little workshop. Steve Gadlin, give us a reset on your idea for tonight, Clownlurgy's.
Yeah, so the invention is called Clownlurgy's, and what it is a red nose filtering system that clips onto your nose, much like a clown nose, and it filters out all tree and flower pollens and rids you of your seasonal allergies.
Okay, 630 has a question. What if I have to sneeze?
Well, the nice thing about Clownlurgy's is it doesn't just clip onto your nose, but there's an actual strap, a thin 2-inch thick leather strap that goes around the back of your head and fastens the same way a belt does. So I challenge you to sneeze hard enough to knock Clownlurgy's off of your face.
Okay. I don't know if the question was about if it was going to knock it off the face, but what happens when you sneeze? Let's say it's immobile.
Yeah, well, again, no, that's a great question. Again, as I said before, Clownlurgy's nose filtering system can store up to 2 pounds of facial mucus before it becomes uncomfortable. And again, it wicks it away from your face the way a good workout shirt does.
312-981-7200 is the phone number tonight. 312-981-7200. You can do a phone. You can text. Let's go to the phones. Let's go to Ron. Ron, what do you think? Yay or nay? Yay or nay on Clownlurgy's?
I think you should include a Steve Martin arrow through the head with that.
Yeah, there you go.
And a Trump wig.
Oh, that's interesting.
And fill that clown nose with some Colombian flower, and you'll make millions.
Well,
good. Some ads. Thanks, Ron.
Yeah, you know, there are. If you choose to hype up the clown nose look, there are plenty of accessories you can buy at other stores. But, you know, we wouldn't want to spend time building those types of accessories because we're working with some pretty caustic chemicals in developing this anti-allergen system.
You keep talking about that. So is it the anti-allergen system that has the chemicals, or is it the nose, the rubber and the sponge nose?
Well, it's a little bit of everything. So, you know, again, we start with a standard foam clown nose, but we soak that in some chemicals that, by golly, they'll kill anything that tries to get through them. So we're talking bacteria and pollen. Mm-hmm. The whole thing will just, that's why we do recommend you put a thin white makeup layer on the sides of your nose and into your cheeks to block the foam from actually touching your face. The chemicals are not friendly to human skin, but you know what? They're even less friendly to tree pollen.
312-981-7200. Mary asks, she says, "Dear Steve, congratulations on making something scalable. Prototype?"
She's asking if we have a prototype.
Yeah,
of course we have a prototype. We've been testing this on people all over the city in key allergy areas and we've got plenty of beta testers. If you're interested in becoming one, you can sign up. We've got a lengthy release you'd have to sign, but we'd be happy to take on more.
219 says, if you're supposed to breathe, if you're not supposed to breathe through your nose, then how does it filter out the pollens?
Well, again, we never tell anyone not to breathe through their nose. We hope you will, but we're just saying it's going to be a lot more difficult to breathe through your nose once you have this strapped to your nose. Remember, that's a pretty hefty leather belt that's keeping it pretty flush against your face. You'd have to exert very strong inhalation powers to actually pull air through this thick foam filter. So if you do, though, no allergens are getting through. So what we find is a lot of people end up breathing through their mouth, which is actually healthier for you anyway. And some of your tongue mucuses and natural tongue acids will block some of those pollens and allergens as well.
312 asked, have you made clinical trials? Is it FDA approved?
Well, again, we're trying to skirt around the FDA with a lot of our products, this one especially. What we find is the FDA generally presents more issues than we like to deal with.
Well, I guess it's what we're dealing with.
You know, this isn't a food. It's definitely not a food. We don't want it to touch your skin, and if it touches the inside of your mouth, you're going to deal with blisters for weeks. So I don't think the FDA really has much to say about non-food items.
630 goes, well, how can I continue to pick my nose? I know that's that seems to be a foolish question, but
no. Look, here's my stance on nose picking. It's something that gets a bad rap, but some of us with hay fever and nasal allergies have to pick our noses just to breathe. So this will hopefully make it so you don't need to do it. But if you do, you're able to, you know, you unbuckle the leather belt in the back of your head and remove it. It'll slide off pretty easily once that buckle is off. And then, then you pick your nose and you put it back on. Okay. So it's not difficult.
630, mouth breathing would still result in getting the allergens in your sinuses in general. Mm-hmm. Does not fix the problem.
Well,
and makes you look silly. 1,000 times nay, stores the mucus gross.
No, I think people are misunderstanding how allergens work when inhaled through the mouth. And that's actually the mouth and mouth breathing mm-hmm. is called nature's allergy cure. So
Walt's got a question about the business side of this. Walt, what do you think? First off, yay or nay on clownergies?
I thought it was a joke initially. But obviously, you've got a pipeline to Mark Cuban. Cuban. And he'll ask you questions. Do you have it patented? And the Food and Drug Administration would have to approve of it. And so having said that, I don't think you have an idea that he would even look at.
Well, I'll tell you, the Food and Drug Administration does not hold court over this type of thing because this is okay. Not a food.
Well, having said that, the reason I called is because I'm working on an idea that I would like to run past Mark Cuban.
Cuban.
Do you act as a middleman that I could get in touch with you? And when I'm ready to go with this idea that you would run it past him?
Well, I don't know about that.
Yeah, it's not part of my contract with him. And in fact, he doesn't like it when I bring other ideas. He's so enamored by the ideas that I bring to him. I don't know. But, you know, a lot of times people tell me their ideas, and to be honest, I had already thought of them. So I'll bring those to him. But I'm not, you know, it's not something I make a practice of.
Okay, well, this idea you've never thought of. So
I bet I have.
I'll bet you have.
I bet I have. What is it?
It's how to improve the education.
Thought of it.
And what's your concept?
Same as yours.
You got to be kidding me. You're nuts. Thank you for your time.
Thanks, Walt.
Now he's going to try to steal my idea.
Well, it sounded like you were kind of fooling around there, but anyway. Nope. 312 says the chemicals would involve drugs. So when you say Food and Drug Administration.
Well, no, not drugs. We're not talking about putting cocaine or heroin
in this thing. But the food and drugs, I mean, they do medicine. They do things that...
We're not even using medicine. We're using standard varnishes and, you know, caustic lye, things like that.
Well, 262 has a question. Leather straps, caustic chemicals, hard to breathe through. Why would anyone want this thing?
Well, allergy season is a real hassle, I'll tell you that. And everybody loves clowns.
All right, Clownergies, 312-981-7200. All right. A lot of stuff about the FDA, mm-hmm. and then also a lot coming through here about Patch Adams.
Okay.
People saying wrong as usual. Google Patch Adams and you'll see the red nose.
I don't have to. His name is Patch Adams. His name isn't Red Nose Adams. I think it's obvious Patch Adams was named after pirate patches and he wears an eye patch.
Well, 219 says Patch Adams was not named for the was not named Eye Patch Adams.
Yes. He was.
And then there's a picture that they send of Wikipedia with his picture, the real Patch Adams, and there's no eye patch.
Okay, we're not talking about the real Patch Adams. We're talking about Robin Williams' character Patch Adams from the movie Patch Adams. Full name, Eye Patch Adams, was a pirate who became a doctor. Funny story about a pirate who became a doctor.
All right, 312-981-7200. Now that we put the Patch Adams controversy behind us, let's get back to the idea at hand. Clownlergies. Mm-hmm. Do you like it? Do you not? We got one more segment. We'll take a quick break. We'll come back, and we will continue and see if we can get a quorum. Is that the right word? That would be the right word. Whether or not this idea, clownlergies, has any legs.
I think you want a consensus.
A consensus.
Yes.
We will give you a beautiful 7 3/4 inch fry pan free of charge.
It's the Frying Pan Special Edition Thursday night instead of Friday night. Inventor Steve Gadlin in studio tonight because tomorrow we're at the Chicago Auto Show. Steve Gadlin had one less day to come up with an idea, but he did come up with a gem tonight. Clownlergies. One more time, the elevator pitch on Clownlergies.
Yeah, Clownlergies is a nose filter that you strap to your face with a nice leather belt. It fits right over your nose and is red and foamy, just like a clown nose. So it gets rid of something you hate by filtering out tree and flower pollens, gets rid of those allergies, and makes you look like an entertaining, fun clown, which is something everybody loves.
All right, let's go to the lines. Let's go to Donna. Donna, yay or nay on clownlergies?
It's a big nay right now. Mm. First off, Google says it's not pollens, it's pollen. The other thing
let's stay right there, that Donna, because I've got a lot of this, and I was hoping that it was just like a weird crutch, but it does. I have to agree with Donna. It's pollen, not pollen.
Well, I think we're talking about two different things then.
No, I think it's pollen, right?
It's pollen.
Donna? It's pollen, right?
Well, that's
pollen is a country in Europe.
Poland is a country. I'm not talking about pollen, though. I'm talking about pollen, tree pollen and flower pollen, the allergens.
Yeah, no, that's pollen.
It's pollen.
Mm, we'll agree
to
disagree.
We go to an allergist, and it's called pollen from the doctor. My daughter and I both get allergy shots.
And it's pollen, yeah.
Well, so that's say from goodbye to those pollen. Allergy shots.
You don't need to.
It's
yeah,
time
you got
for clownlergies.
So what do you think of the idea here, Donna?
Okay, so clowns are the creepiest thing in the world. I don't know anybody that likes clowns. My daughter is a second grade teacher, and they can't even dress up as clowns on Halloween.
Oh, is that a school rule?
Is that a rule?
Yes.
I'll be honest. I think that's the school board overstepping their bounds.
Yeah, that's a different issue for a different time.
The whole creepy clown thing.
Yeah, there was all that clown stuff.
Well,
around.
Again, clowns are creepy maybe because people don't see enough of them. So once clownlergies are on the streets and 50% of the people, allergy sufferers are wearing this product, I don't think it will be as creepy. It'll be more common.
We live in Illinois. We have politicians. We have plenty of clowns here.
Hey,
see, that's
there you
yeah.
go. All right. That's there you right. go. Thanks,
but
Donna.
But my other thought was maybe if you went with like a Lone Ranger mask idea.
Oh, yeah. What about like a mask,
nose?
Like a sleep mask kind of thing? Thanks, Donna.
Well, I'm not sure that would do the trick. That would cover your eyes and you wouldn't be able to see.
No, but you could do it like over the bridge of your nose or something.
No, the Lone Ranger was a blind cowboy and he wore the mask to block out sunlight.
No, Lone.
And that's not, we don't want to do that. I know it's amazing the things he could do. As a blind cowboy.
Yeah.
But that's not, I don't want to impair people's vision. I just want to make it more difficult to breathe in through their nose.
Okay. All right. So I'm passing up all the FDA stuff. We kind of nailed that. There's a lot of people who really want to get at FDA compatibility. Speaking of compatibility, 773S, is it Bluetooth compatible?
Oh, that's a great question. And I forgot to mention it is. So we do have Bluetooth compatibility built into it. And it is battery powered and you do need to recharge it every 3 hours to keep it the Bluetooth function operational. But what it will do is alert your phone when the mucus level is too high. Mm-hmm. And it also gives you a daily pollen count, which is something you'd normally have to go to weather.com to find.
Yeah. Right.
No. I'm talking about something different now.
Oh, so they're not the same.
Well, there's the pollen count you get on weather.com.
And then what is pollen?
Well, a pollen count will tell you how much pollen is in the air.
Okay. All right, 312-981-7200. Let's get to some of the texts that we passed up, the ones that weren't necessarily questions, a little bit more criticism. 219, does this guy still live in his mom's basement?
No.
Okay. Oh, and he said also big nay.
Okay.
But not the dumbest thing you've suggested.
Well, I'll take that as a compliment. I'll take what I can.
630 says, nice to hear Steve again. Glad Thanks. He's back doing the same old, same old. Looking forward to more.
Thank you.
847 says, I turn off the radio when this idiot comes on.
Well, it takes one to know one. Right. That's, you know, that's all I can say to something like that.
Okay, there we go. 262 says, you've got to be kidding. The Lone Ranger was not blind, and it's pollen.
Okay, I'm not kidding, and I think you need to rewatch some of those episodes. What made the Lone Ranger so exciting was that he could do all of these things without the ability of sight. That's why he had Tonto, his guide, who would guide him through different towns.
Yeah, you know, it's been such a long time since
watch
I've
it again.
That. I'd have to watch
you may
it
have
again,
forgot
but
that, but that's why he wore that mask. It's the
feels
same reason
like that's not right.
The same reason Fonzie wore dark sunglasses to mask the sun from his blindness.
I think that might have been one, like, character arc. That would have been one storyline where maybe he lost his sight for one episode, but Fonzie could see.
Again, we'll have to go back to the show. It's not how I remember it.
847 says, here's a perfect invention. Call it Clown Cane, where you just load up the clown allergies with cocaine, and whenever you want to hit, you can just...
Well, I'll tell you, he says that as a joke, but because of all the caustic lye that's built into the clown allergies nose filter, I think cocaine would disintegrate on impact. So it's actually a good drug prevention tool as well.
Yeah, so it's okay. Well, yeah. Okay.
You know, you can put a lock on the belt in the back of the head and completely prevent someone from snorting cocaine or other nasally ingested drugs.
All right, so let's get to some of the stuff. You said you can, the 815 says, get this clown off your show. He's not funny.
Okay.
He makes you look bad. As in, he ruins the show.
I'd like to make you look good with a clown with his nose filter.
I was going to say, I don't agree with that. 309, this guy's an idiot, and so is this idea. Sounds like he's never wrong about anything.
Well, thank you. That's
he will probably tell you his pronunciation of Poland is correct.
Yes, my pronunciation of Poland is correct.
872 says, you're right on the Lone Ranger. He wasn't blind. He was colorblind.
I remember it as every blind.
Okay, so the last question, this is a good one too. 312, so if how much does it cost?
Oh, thank you for asking. So the Clownlergy's nose filtering system, again, you only need to buy one per season. So you buy one in the spring, one in the fall, and you wash it out every night. You charge it every few hours. $250, and a lot of that cost is to cover, you know, things like the caustic lye and other chemicals that are built into the system. But again, I tell you, we've talked to test consumers, and they would be willing to pay double of that to get to skip an allergy season, that's for sure.
All right, we'll give the last word to Luke. Luke, what do you think, yay or nay on Clownlergies?
You know what? I'm going to say nay, but I have a better idea for you.
Oh.
It's called Rudallergies. It's a play on words on Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer and allergies. It's
the same
a fixture,
concept, but a different name.
The concept, no, completely different. It's a red blinking fixture that you strap to your nose with a thick leather belt. First you've ever heard of it. You heard it here first. And you know what? I'm giving it to you.
Well,
they can run with it.
I appreciate it, but that's something I also thought of earlier. I just hadn't said it yet. But that is an idea that I had, so I appreciate, you know, I appreciate you bringing that up. That'll be a 2.0 for us.
Thank you. Thank you for, you know, giving me the time to give you my idea. I'm handing it over to you. And well, whatever you want to do with my idea,
my idea earlier.
It
was
and you're welcome.
It was already my idea.
You are so welcome.
Well, I appreciate the call, but this was my idea
before.
So
thanks, Luke. All right, so there you go. Really ended on a
positive
IP positive.
I think a positive note.
Yeah, we were discussing intellectual property was whose mm-hmm. between Luke and Steve. Steve Gadlin, I have to say, I agree with one of the texters that it's not your dumbest idea.
Oh, that's great.
And I do think that there would have to be some social change to accept the fact that there would be a number of people walking around with red noses on.
Yeah, but you know I'm all about social change.
You are. I mean, that's the one thing. One thing I always, always enjoy about you, Steve, is that you envision a world that's different.
Yeah, that's right.
Steve Gadlin, thanks so much. Thank you so much for bringing Clownergies. You'll be back next month. Yep.
Yes.
I hear that. Next month here in March. Thanks, Steve.
Thanks for having me, Justin.
That's going to do it tonight. We are at the auto show tomorrow night, 7 to 10, Talking Cars. It's our new concept. A show called Talking Cars. It'll be fun. Patty Vasquez up next, and she's in studio.
Do you get to broadcast from inside a car? That would be fun.
It would be. It's, you know, it's such an interesting...
Right?
Like, it's up on a... Have you ever done an auto show?
Yes.
Like, you know what I'm talking about?
Like a platform
that,
and stuff.
Yeah, platform stuff. I would much rather be down in the cars like in that area, right?
I think it would be great to have a car. Yeah, that'd be fun.
I think we just came up with an idea. I think we'll go to Pete Zimmerman, and he'll just sit in different cars and explain what it feels like to be in the car.
There you go. Yeah.
What do you think of that?
You see how the acoustics sound in a, you know,
yeah, exactly. Like
in a different SUV.
You can't turn the car on, so you have to make, you know, car noises.
You're going to know people, though. They'll give you the keys.
Vroom,
you
should be able
to, yeah.
I'll just say, does this come in a manual transmission? That's what I'll ask every question.
Yeah, that's your question. All right, Patty, you're back. How
yes,
is Springfield?
You know, it's still there. It's where we left it.
I love where you broadcast. I know exactly where that's
that
at.
That basement
yep,
against
I
that
know
wall.
Everything about that, yeah.
Well, it was funny because I've been sitting in the press box, but when they have a big event like the budget address, I kind of scramble, and there's usually one seat left for unassigned, you know,
because that's the one time everybody goes down there.
Yeah, so I always feel like I'm gonna get thrown out of the press box just for like, oh, you're just a radio host. You can't sit here.
Yeah,
I always feel like I'm gonna
you're
be discovered.
On WGN.
Yeah,
you can't sit here. This is reserved for downstate county reporters, right?
And not to diminish, they all work really hard, but there'll be like two reporters from the same newspaper.
Yeah,
and
you're
like, come on,
go walk around.
Give WGN a little. Give us
go
a little.
See
room.
What Springfield's got to offer.
Go sit in the gallery. Yeah. I think next time I'm going to sit in the gallery because from the gallery I can actually Facebook Live it though.
Oh, there you go.
I'm not allowed to in the press box.
Oh, you can't do
that? No.
They haven't caught up to technology yet?
Well, you know, they don't want the press controlling that. You know, we're fake.
Yeah, that's right.
The media.
The fake Springfield press. That's what I'm waiting. I'm waiting for that. So a lot of the Democrats were doing the sort of alternate facts signs and things that were on their desks. Like they would put signs like
in Springfield?
Rauner equals alternate facts. I'm like, that's not even an Illinois story.
They know.
You're mixing your metaphors there. Get out of there. That's not even your space.
Justin, they've been all over that since the day that happened. They have been all about the alt facts and the national news and Trump, and it's using that. Well, there's a lot of contention on both sides, and I think a lot of it does reflect the national tone.
I mean, you are in the bird's eye. You have a bird's eye view of what's going to be pretty historic to see if they can come to an agreement here.
I don't think they are. No.
And they saw today, like Lisa Madigan's request was overturned.
It was denied, so
that's not good.
And she's going to refile. No, I don't think. I don't think that they're even close. You know, there's a lot. You know what? We're gonna.
I can't.
I know, right?
Save it.
There's just a lot of people. No, not, I don't even know if we're going to talk about it on the show tonight. There are a lot of people suffering, and it's starting to really affect more people than they had before, and I really hope that the people who are the most vulnerable and students and look, the gun violence in Chicago, there's so many things that we can't even begin.
Even beyond the people who are suffering the most, the idea that even people who may not have that to be their number one priority, the idea that we are accruing so much debt as a state, and the minute that they actually get a spending plan in place, we are going to be saddled with debt we didn't have before. It's just, it's not something that is good in any circles in the state of Illinois.
No, we'll still be catching up for a very long time.
All right, have a great show.
You have a good night. On that note, we're all screwed. Woohoo!